It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are off and running for this penultimate day of 2020. This miserable old year is stumbling off and being an absolute prick all the way to the end. But there's just not that much left of it. Of course, years are artificial constructs imposed by human beings upon an otherwise indifferent universe. But nonetheless, there's only one day after this left of 2020, because it is the 30th day of December 2020. This is the Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That, of course, is where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place when this program is live Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you pop in chat room early, well, you'll be greeted by early arrivers, Anatole and Squeaky, and capably moderated by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Deacon Steve from Georgistan. And, of course, with his promotion to Brother Deacon, well, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Yeah, it is. It's prayer meeting Wednesday, and the little old blue-haired ladies went down to the restaurant supply store, and they got a bunch of those plastic to-go containers because they spent the day biling chickens and chopping vegetables, carrots and onions and celery and the like. And oh, they made a huge pot for a day just like this. You know, you don't want to get all weighed down on the day before New Year's Eve. And they made this huge pot of golden chicken bone broth noodle soup. And they sent the little old blue-haired men out, fanning out across the community, delivering warm soup on a not-so-cold day. It's all of 50 degrees outside the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. It's been a little breezy, but nice just the same. And the soup was well appreciated, and they set aside a bowl for me. That was mighty nice of them. And so we find ourselves at midweek, the final prayer meeting Wednesday of 2020. And our final chance in 2020 to gather together here in this special and decidedly unsacred space. Yes. And, of course, this program exists entirely upon the goodwill of the people who participate in it. And so we have no subscribers for the 30th or the 31st days of the month. But thank you, nonetheless, to all of our subscribers. And tomorrow we will take note of the Patreon subscribers, as we do on the final broadcast day of every month. And so we find ourselves with a fundraising goal to wrap up 2020 and kick it in the tuchus and tell it not to let the door split it where the good Lord hit it where the good Lord split it, and to otherwise generally piss off. Yes, indeed. There's $765 to finish 2020. The button for the GoFundMe campaign for my oral surgery is still up at headon.live. GoFundBob.com will take you right there. And we're trying to cross the $6,000 mark and get to the point where we've got both the surgery and the reconstructive aspect of it, the subsequent reconstruction. It's a year-long miserable process, fully funded. And hopefully a little something extra to make sure the bills get paid if I happen to be unable to speak for, you know, a week or two or three or something like that. Right. So, but the important part here. Oh, hi. I'm Bob, but we'll get to that. The important part here is that, brethren and sistren, it's prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is. And even though our services have been virtual for 9 months and we haven't been able to gather in our imaginary cathedral or our imaginary fellowship hall, well, we're going to continue doing social distancing and maintaining safe non-worship here at the cathedral. So, for those of you at home and on the road or wherever, but mostly at home. No, if you're driving, don't do anything. Just listen. But if you're at home, I'm asking you, brethren and sistren, to get up on your feet and out of your seat and walk on over to the computer there and lay your hands upon the subwoofer, brethren and sistren, and feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through you from hope, glory, the server on high. I am Arch Pope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized, Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Munificent Mullah, Grand Guru, Bob Kincaid, and this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Brethren and sisters, I'm going to call upon the Minister of Music to step forward, please, and lead us in our offertory hymn. Ho! Amen. Glory. Praise his holy name. And the brother deacons will be sitting by their computer terminals. They don't have the heavy brass-bound velvet-lined plates with the PayPal button in the bottom. But they'll be watching. They'll be watching. The brother deacons will. And they will see the love offerings come a-flowing in. Glory. Amen. So, Brother Minister of Music, if you would, please. Amen.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord!
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around!
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around!
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, he's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, brethren and sister, and I'm a telling you, we are ready for some magnificent reportage of praiseworthy tales of faith and action. That's faith in action, not inaction. One word. And, well, I know of no better place to start, because we haven't had one of these in a while. You know, the great bugaboo of evangelical Christianity is, of course, yeah, evolution. Because one of the things that you can learn by watching evangelicals respond to basic biological science is that the essence of evangelical Christianity is racist. Take, for instance, young Matt Powell. Now, he's an up-and-comer. He is a hate-filled evangelical, batshit crazy religious maniac who's probably got a long and wealthy future in front of him. I mean, he's already established his evangelical street creds, among other things. He wants gay people executed because he thinks the Bible says so. And he thinks that women are out there dressing like hooers. And something that we had on this program a while back, that he thinks atheists do all the school shootings, even though, you know, some of them are actually quoting the Bible and stuff and leave manifestos. Never mind. He's a real Lulu. This Matt Powell, one of my personal favorites, is his claim that, that dinosaurs were killed in the Civil War. Dinosaurs. I guess Jeb Stuart, was when he was off on his ride about at Gettysburg, was riding velociraptors? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Matt Powell decided it was time to take a run at evolution. And these things, well, they just never quite work out, do they?
Hey guys, this is Matt Powell. I wanted to do this quick video just addressed to the theistic evolutionists that are out there.
And by the way, Matt Powell in this video, because it's video and not just radio, Matt Powell in this video is wearing a black suit with a black shirt and a black tie and sitting on like a conference chair in the middle of a field next to some woods with snow on the ground. Maybe it's got something to do with climate change. I honestly don't know.
Those who believe that somehow the Bible is compatible with theistic evolution. Well, a couple things. Number one, we have already verified and proven that evolution is nothing more than a fairy tale. And
No, he hasn't. But let's not get caught up in the details, because what's coming is just too fucking rich.
As Christians, we should believe in scientific, logical, and rational things, not primitive superstition and fairy tales. Now, the reason that I say it's a fairy tale, and I'll just give you one fact in this video.
Curiously, he has a very tenuous grasp on the definition of the word fact, but he's on a roll.
That why we know that evolution is a complete hoax and a fairy tale, and that it's just bizarre.
Yeah.
Because in order for...
Because what he's about to say isn't bizarre at all.
For evolution to be true, monkeys would have had to surf from Africa to South America 34 million years ago on rafts.
Yeah. Raft surfing monkeys from Africa. You'll notice that the monkeys come from Africa to South America. And one of the greatest objections of these white evangelicals to Darwin's theory of evolution stems from the fact that we all come from a common ancestor who wasn't a monkey, but was very definitely a primate. And shh, don't tell this dude. Don't, for God's sakes, please don't tell Matt Powell, but we're still primates. Well, maybe not Matt Powell. I'm sure his cranial capacity is entirely consumed by his great big lizard brain, but no, most of us are, almost all of us are primates. But the ancient racist monkey slur I ain't descended from no monkey. What they're putting forward is the idea that they are somehow a separate person from people who evolved in Africa. Well, okay, they didn't. There wasn't any evolution. It was 7 days creation, right? Sure. No, surf monkeys from Africa. How can you not?
Let's go surfing now, everybody's learning how. Come on a safari with me.
Yeah, I know. This is just that nutty. Yeah. Tell us, Matt!
The only way that monkeys could have got there, since they found monkey fossils there that weren't supposed to be there according to evolution, because monkeys were in Africa, the only way they could have got there according to evolution theory was surfing the ocean blue. And so, if you're an evolutionist, that's something that you have to believe as part of the theory. Otherwise,
not really.
Evolution doesn't work. Because it's fact that we found monkey fossils in South America. So, either one of two things happened. Either the...
Wait, he acknowledges fossils, but... Oh, dear.
Monkeys surfed there, or they were placed there by a flood and through hydrologic sorting. Something that the scientific method would actually predict, and that the Bible already told
no,
you
it wouldn't.
Would happen.
Really wouldn't.
The Bible says, for this they willingly are ignorant of.
Yeah, so let's get this sorted out real quick. Turn it. Okay, go away, Beach Boys. Well, we can't take this when we go for a swim, because he's going to get drunk, and he's going to fall in, he's going to drown. Too soon. But no, see... What young Matt Powell fails to understand here is that the monkeys in South America are of entirely different species from, yes, monkeys, but, you know, the great apes, which are not monkeys, chimpanzees, not monkeys, gorillas, not monkeys, bonobos, not monkeys, Australopithecus afarensis, not a monkey, Australopithecus robustus, not a monkey, Homo, how is it we've talked about the pedigree of humanity two nights in a row on this program. Homo erectus, not a monkey. Homo habilis, not a monkey. Matt Powell, monkey. I'm not sure if he's Mike or Peter or Davey or what the other. No. This is definitely bingo, bango, or bongo. That's a Gilligan's Island reference, by the way. When, what was it, the mosquitoes accidentally washed up on the island? Bingo, bango, bongo, and Fred or something. Yeah. And Don Wells, Marianne. Word reached us today that she passed away at the age of 82, and the coronavirus took her. God damn it! The next to last day of 2020, and they take Marianne, this virus. Fuck! It's just wrong. I'm telling you, it is just wrong. And it, by the way, when I was pulling the music for this, it was between Surf and Safari, and of course, yeah, the Ventures wipe out. You know, what? How could you not? But let's give Matt Powell a few more minutes to make a definitely not primate monkey of himself. Sure. Wow, thank you to Pauline via Twitter. Hey, Bob, here's some Lake Michigan hydrologic sorting. Oh, my God. Wait, where's the monkey? I live. I do. I confess it. I confess it. I live for these stories. I do. I'm incorrigible that way. Yep.
Standing out of the water and in the water. The Bible says, whereby the world that then was, being overflowed with water, perished. And so we know, beyond any shadow of doubt, that the Bible teaches a global flood. Now, evolutionists have to completely deny this, because if the flood is true, evolution is false. And if the flood...
You know what else is true if the flood's true? The flood killed all the fish. And I'm trying to figure out how more water kills all the fish. Well, Matt Powell, maybe he'll deal with that in another video. Maybe this one he'll be sitting in a field full of snow in a Speedo or something. I mean, you know, water. Oh, God. It hurts. But all kidding aside, no, not really. There's going to be more kidding. All kidding aside, no, still, more kidding. This is actually more dangerous than it is funny. Because this is how this kind of loopy lizard brain bullshit is how you get a whole bunch of Americans to declare that they won't wear no mask. This guy and others like him are how the virus spreads. Sure, it spreads as droplets and aerosols in the air. Sure, and no getting around that. But it has to be just like, you know, with arson, there has to be an accelerant. And the accelerant for this virus is twofold: ignorance and stupidity. As ever, ignorance can be remedied with education. But as the old bumper sticker saying goes, You can't fix stupid. And there's likely never going to be any cure for Matt Powell because, well, the hustle's working for him, frankly. And so he has no incentive to stop getting people who aren't very sharp to think that, what was it, hydrologic depositional sorting carried monkey carcasses from the African continent to South America? I guess young Matt Powell, because he does appear to be young, has never actually taken much of a long look at the continents and noticed how that westward bulge of Africa tucks neatly into the little curvature and the eastward bulge of South America as if they were jigsaw puzzle pieces that might once have actually been joined together. As Steve in New York points out, one word, Pangea. I've got a dear friend for whom the word Pangea has a lot of meaning. You'll actually be hearing from her tomorrow before we start the front porch. She can tell you all you ever wanted to know about Pangea. And of course, I have a connection to Pangea because scant miles from where I now sit broadcasting run the last remnants of the greatest river that flowed across Pangea when all the landmass on Earth was a single unit and South America and Africa hadn't yet come apart at the seams, as it were. That's your plate Titanics there, with a back reference to yesterday. Yeah. But no, the new river, the New River Gorge Bridge that I talk about all the time crosses, that is the last remnant of what geologists have named in the Great Tays River, TEAY*S, the Great Tays River. Its source now rises in North Carolina, Stan, and flows northward through Virginia, and then north and west through West Virginia. And it terminates in this county by joining with the Gauley River to form the Great Kanawha River, which in turn empties into the Ohio. I say it like that just for Steve in New York. Ohio at Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Not too far across the river from Galpless, which I also pronounced correctly just for Steve in New York. And so we know about these things here. I actually had enough hours in geology in college that I could have had a minor if the English department would have let me have minors. But no, I've just got one miserable major in English, and it completely obviates all the hours in Latin and classics and geology and theater and anthropology, archaeology, and no, I'm an English major. Surf monkeys. Yeah, as Megan observes. So we had dinosaurs during the Civil War and airports during the Revolution. Any other historical lesser-known facts I don't know about? And clearly, evangelical Matt Powell doesn't know the white hat, black hat rule. If you wear all black, you're the villain, unless you're Johnny Cash. And he ain't Johnny Cash. I know, Ralph's is sitting there struggling. What? Monkeys surfing on rafts? Yes, Ralph's. Yes, monkeys surfing on rafts. I wonder if the surf monkeys had at least figured out the whole, you know, pointed nose, or are they just, or are these the kind of Gilligan's Island rafts that never really went anywhere and sank in the lagoon? I guess we'll never know, because there's no archaeological record of the surf monkeys or the rafts they surfed in on. That's a new insult, isn't it? Fuck you and the raft you surfed in on. I can't tell you how happy I was when I saw this story.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Megan says, you have a friend that knows about Pangea? Well, get her on the show, Bob. What's she going to do? When's she going to come on and talk to us? She's going to be here tomorrow. In tomorrow's program, before we get the front porch started, she'll be joining us. And I can't wait to introduce her to you. We've known each other for a very, very long time. Dear friend of mine. All the way back to high school. Billable Rick says, the passing of Don Wells, you know you're old when one of your first flames from very afar has died. Rest in peace, Ms. Wells, a.k.a. Marianne, the good girl. Thanks, COVID-19. Bastard. Yeah. Well, it's just, COVID-19 is just going to keep kicking us in the teeth thanks to people like Matt Powell. Do you have any more stomach for this? I know, I'm running out too. This goes on for minutes on end.
Didn't happen, then monkeys would have had to surf to South America in order for those fossils to even exist there. This is all recent teaching of evolution. As we make more discoveries, we see that creation comes back time and time again as true, and evolution comes back time and time again as a fairy tale. It's a fairy story for those who are afraid of the light, for those who are afraid of Jesus, the truth, the way, and the life. So, they also teach that duck-billed dinosaurs, because they found, as of November 7th, this was published,
quack,
that they found a duck-billed dinosaur fossil in Africa. Now, duck-billed dinosaurs...
Now, I don't mean, when I said quack, that was not a reference to the duck-billed dinosaur. That was a reference to Matt Powell here. Quack. Yeah. Stephen New York notes, I'm confused. Mr. Crazy Monkeys in South America. The one thing I can never understand about these people is why? Why do they care this much? Because it's a good dollar. There's big money in stupid. There's big, you know, he preaches, you know, oh, I'm showing you the light. When the entire time he's got a congregation that's sitting in darkness. That's why he's wearing a black suit, because he's definitely not Johnny Cash. See how it works? They care that much because for some reason or another, between this and the precious little fetuses, it keeps them in fresh black suits and Lear jets. God. In millions of years ago, 32, surf monkeys sailed the ocean blue. Okay, I think I've worked this just about as much as I can, but I don't know. We'll probably come back around to it. It's almost unavoidable. I've had a horrible COVID outbreak up on Martha's Vineyard, where the mayor was heard to declare this is not a boating accident. No, it's not. There are 11 people in the outbreak in Martha's Vineyard. And curiously, 5 of them went to the same Bible study. The other 6 who have the Rona were either family members or people who actually lived in their houses. Mm-hmm. What we're finding out more and more is that the best way in the world to spread the Rona is to send people to church to loudly pray and sing to make the Rona go away. So, enter Reverend Dan Davey, who never required any masks at the meetings, the Bible studies. According to a reporter, Jim Osborne, who also attends the study group, he said Reverend Davey, the gospel sharp, never wore a mask. He sort of gave us the impression that because it was a Bible study, we were under God's protection during the Bible study. And, well, I guess we all made that same false assumption. Said Reverend Gospel Sharp Davy, I don't recall ever saying God's going to protect you, don't worry about it, but I live my life, frankly, that God's going to take care of me regardless. There were a lot of other viruses before COVID-19 came along, and I'm sure there's more to come. And he'll be happy to spread them, too. In the name of Jesus! Ha! Yeah. And this, in turn... Wait a minute. There's a cowbell. With an obscure geological reference, always gets a cowbell. Tom in sunny San Rafael says, Surf monkeys, reunite Gondwana land. Gondwana land or bust. Of course. Billable Rick answering Steve in New York's question. Steve, why ask why? These religious grifters don't care so long as the check clears and the new Gulfstream 5 is fully gassed and has a Bond girl pilot at the helm. That too. We're nearing New Year's Eve. I'm feeling generous with the cowbells. Meanwhile, Lee in New York says, Stop it, Bob. Who wouldn't want to be Johnny Cash? I wouldn't. Johnny Cash is dead. Refute my reasoning. As to Surf Monkeys, Billable Rick adds, these creatures really do exist. I can prove it. I've taught my 10-month-old German Shepherd Bella how to surf. If a dog can surf, then certainly a monkey can. And maybe even better. Maybe the surf monkey can ride the back of the dog. And after that is turtles all the way down. Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah, let's, and speaking of how idiots help to spread the Rona, let's take a woman, let's don't, but let us consider a woman visiting her local UPS store, where for all I know, maybe this is a UPS store that doesn't have any Klans people with a, but never mind. It went up on TikTok and went viral there. It went viral at Reddit as, oh, what shall we name her? UPS store Stacy? Does that work? She was upset because she said that 3 packages of hers had been misdelivered, but the reason she didn't have her packages was because there was a masking mandate at the store, and, well, UPS store Stacy refused to wear her mask.
If you just step back outside.
18, and I would like to receive those.
You're holding up my process. I have to get out of here.
I'm not. He is.
He's choosing to be there.
Ma'am, we cannot
shut down
help
your
you.
Phone.
We cannot help you,
I'm
ma'am.
Not shutting down my phone.
Ma'am, we cannot help you. Until
this
you
is a private
outside.
Residence, and actually, I am restricting your recording. And so, therefore, you are not allowed to do this.
Oh, what? Apparently, she was. Because she clearly kept videoing, and, well, UPS store Stacy, who, for all I know, believes in surf monkeys, UPS store Stacy tried to tell her that the UPS store was her private residence and that she couldn't video there. Man, this is quality.
This is nobody's residence.
Ma'am, this is a Wendy's.
Oh, apparently because I had 3 packages delivered here.
Where's your mask?
We will help you. My mask? I'm not a conformer. Why are you wearing one?
Because I feel like...
Why are you wearing one?
Because I'm protecting everyone else.
I've already had COVID back on December 20th, 2019.
Can you go so we can...
How about that? She had COVID in December 2019. Before it was even publicly acknowledged. Well, that's damned interesting. Mm-hmm. I have to offer up praise for the people who shoot these videos instead of going and slapping the spit out of people like UPS, UPS store Stacy here. They have heroic levels of patience.
Can you finish?
Huh?
Can you go so we can finish?
Can you finish?
I can't because you're holding up everybody.
Is she the manager? Who's the manager?
No one's going to help you until you step back outside.
Who is the manager? Who is?
Yeah. And of course, as she asks for the manager, the adventure continues.
No one's going to help you until you step back outside. Is she the manager? Who's the manager?
No one's going to help you until you step back outside.
Who is the manager? Who is? You are.
Yes.
Why didn't you just say that?
So step back outside.
Why didn't you just say that? Where are my packages?
Because you are not.
Where are my packages?
You are
who were delivered here for.
Ma'am.
Several days ago, 5 days ago.
I will come out and help you if you just step back outside so we can.
Go ahead.
So we can.
Take care of her.
No,
go ahead.
Step outside.
Hi.
You will not be helped
Hi.
Until you step outside.
Thank you.
No one's helping you until you step outside. If you want to break our social distancing rules, you are not
I'm
going to be helped.
This is already 6 feet apart, dude.
No, you're not.
No, you're
yes,
not.
Step back outside.
This
please.
Is 6 feet apart.
At the end of the day,
and
man,
we're
we
wearing masks.
Only have three people
you're
in the
not wearing
time.
Masks.
You are the fourth person to walk in.
We're conformers. I'm sorry you established
okay, well,
like that.
But regardless of that, man, we still need you to step back outside.
I have packages here that were
get,
delivered to me, so this
to
is my
you.
Right. This is my private property.
We can give them to you.
This is my right.
She's still arguing the UPS store is her private property. You know, look, you don't have to call the cops. Maybe this is a jurisdiction where the cops won't help you, but you can damn sure call for an emergency mental health check, because in the middle of a pandemic, this woman's sitting there, she admits she's had it, and so she may very well be spewing viral particles. And sadly, this is all we know of the situation. Meanwhile, a line is forming outside. That's not even good outdoors. Even if you're wearing a mask, you got to keep at least 10 feet apart. Oh, by the way, we received our Pullmans today, and there was much rejoicing. I was reminded of that because of the 10 feet apart that Paul from Parts Unknown has encouraged us to observe. And so, you know, I don't know of the res. Oh, wait, there is. Who knew? It's a trilogy.
How can you criminally trespass somebody or
oh, the cops did show up.
Criminally trespassing?
Here, let me explain it to you, okay? Okay. Listen. Okay. They do not want you to come back.
But my business and my packages are sent it here. So,
business.
Yes?
And they have the right to
So if my aunt sends something from Kentucky or from Kansas or Missouri here, and this is allegedly my address.
Ah, poor idiot. Her aunt in Kentucky or Kansas, and God damn it, we're out of states that begin with K. Because, see, here's the other thing. Most of the people working in that UPS store were African-American. UPS store Stacy, of course, is not. And so it's not much of a reach to figure that there's a healthy dose of racism that goes to, God, why am I trying to subject this to rational analysis? Steve in New York says, UPS store as private residence. In the seminal case of Finders versus Keepers, the U.S. Oh, hold on. The U.S. Supreme Court held that if you pay a store to hold packages and they receive them, it is the person's private residence. Yes, of course. Absolutely. And she learned that by attending the College of Law of Google University, no doubt. Oh, help me. Just arrest her. Because they were informing her of the potential for charges for criminal trespass, which she had already committed. There's no civil rights claim here. Curiously, I have not yet heard her reference HIPAA or the Americans with Disabilities Act or, oh, God, Donald Trump.
And I come to pick it up because I have a apartment number or something as 123, and it doesn't exist, or it doesn't get delivered to my house. So what's that?
That's what I'm trying to straighten out right now. Do we need to stop the packages? Yeah, no, she wasn't trying to determine or straighten out anything. She was throwing a goddamn temper tantrum because her white privilege, she thought, kept her from having to wear a mask, and it turned out that it, well, it didn't. Megan, with a great idea, who recently went through a COVID-19 scare, with a potential remedy, Lysol gun. It should be legal in a pandemic that when you encounter these mask holes in public to take out a can of Lysol and start spraying them with it. And whoever in the Horn family has the idea for a Lysol gun, hurry up with that patent. Well, we do have engineers and rocket scientists in this group, so there's that. Now, you're just an iota shy of the thinking of the Viking warrior pharaoh princess, the lovely Agnes, who is all for using a spray can on offending people, the difference being that when Agnes hauls out the spray can, the other hand is holding a Bic lighter in front of the spray, and you know what? People will get away from an impromptu ad hoc flamethrower with real aplomb. No, I'm done here. Right, dear? Dear? Huh, she must be busy. Or maybe she's not one wall away from me or something. Yeah. That. And it's usually not Lysol, Megan. Agnes likes to carry a can of Aquanet in her purse because it makes one humdinger of a flamethrower. And usually it's just one... And problem solved. You don't even have to point it. Just so far, she's managed never to be charged with assault with a deadly hairspray. Lee in New York notes, when I was young, we had water guns. Ever try a super soaker? Don't give them any ideas, Lee. Oh, and working out the theoreticals here, Billable Rick. Surf monkeys, if the surf monkey rode the dog on the surfboard, wouldn't that make it simian on dog sex? Well, quit assuming that just because a dog and a monkey are hanging out together does not mean they're going to have sex, Rick. For God's sakes, get your mind out of the gutter. And quit trying to take the Horn Family Community Congregation down there with you on the next to last day of 2020. I should think you would know better. Oh, and this subject line, make a cowbell comeback. Bob! I did not realize we had a Republican who, according to Bob, is a prominent member of the Horn family community, suggesting that Bob is giving away too many cowbells. That's no Republican. Now stop that. It's a member of the community with a fine and well-honed sense of humor. I know exactly who this is. I think Giraffrey does, too. Here comes Jeffrey. Stunned. Bob, I'm at a loss for words as to why you would allow the likes of Mitch McConnell, one, to be a part of the Horn family, and secondly, dictate how many cowbells are given out. The sound of the cowbell is so melodious and means so much to so many. I do not find the lack of cowbells to be of sound judgment. The cowbell has spoken on the sound judgment. And I didn't know that Giraffrey does impressions, but he does. Yeah, eat it. Anybody that would not encourage Bob to have copious cowbells is a... Wait for it. A dingbat. Oh! Oh! Body blow. Good job, Jeffrey. And again, the goddess of irony is working overtime as there was an Oprah Winfrey reference last night. I'll let Jeffrey explain. Go, Jeffrey. Yes, you all know how generous Oprah is, and so I'm sure she would be saying this about the cowbells. You get a cowbell. You get a cowbell. You get a cowbell. And you get a cowbell. Everybody gets a cowbell. Oprah says, ring the bell, Bob. That's the spirit, Jeffrey, for it is Christmas and the giving season. The ringing of the cowbell, says Joey, is a great bit that you do, and it really makes people feel good when they receive a cowbell. Only someone like Mitch McConnell and most of these asshole Republicans would try to stop the ringing of the cowbell, just like they're trying to ring out every last dollar for their rich benefactors, while so many during the Christmas season are going hungry and homeless. While so many people are suffering, this asshole again said no $2,000 for those homeless, hungry, and out of work. Yes, Jeffrey? Jeffrey chimes in. Yes, somebody ought to take Mitch McConnell and ring his bell. Frankly, Mitch McConnell makes me want to... Again, wait for it. Makes me want to... Bell. You know, one step forward, two steps back. Imagine the poor lame goat who can only make the bell jingle so much. Belch. But Joey agrees, Jeffrey. So many people say they leave a job because they don't feel appreciated as much as not being paid a good wage. People like feeling appreciated, and much appreciation is exuded when they hear the cowbell for their thoughts, sentiments, or attempt at humor. So, Bob, rather than cutting back on the bells, Jeffrey has devised a system for you. Well, I can't wait to hear this.
Yes, I believe there should be degrees of bells, just like the Olympics has medals. If you have a high-quality contribution to the program, Bob would give you a golden bell, which would be a long, loud bell. If you have a quality but not quite great contribution, you'll receive a less vigorous, shorter bell, which we would call a silver bell. It's Christmas time in the city.
No singing! We got a $760 fundraising deficit.
And finally, if you have puns, such as I, Jeffrey the Giraffe, often do, you'll receive a Bronx bell. Not bronze, but Bronx bell, similar to a Bronx cheer in, you know, that, in baseball. And the Bronx bell is a very, very, very slow bell ringing with Bob groaning in the background. You mean like this? Oh.
Yeah, like that. Finally, if the pun is so bad that it's more like a ruse, then Bob will issue what we call a, wait for it, Bob will issue a, oh no, no, just no, make it stop, a Belarus, and Bob will give you a one-way ticket to the Belarus-Russian border so you can see Russia from your front porch. Okay, that's funny. By the way, Jeffrey just cracks up when he hears the slow cowbell because he knows they're for him. And Jeffrey adds, I do not wish to have really good puns, or all of you out there will think somebody else was behind them. Kind of like Joey when his wife told him to fix the mailbox that had been fallen by the snowplow in 2015. Joey was supposed to use the post hole digger and put the post in cement. Well, instead, Joey just got a few of those stretchy ropes with hooks on the end, I think they call them bungee cords, and managed to rig the mailbox up, which, to his credit, has stood for 5 years now. When Joey's wife wondered why he did not cement the post properly, Joey just told her that if the job was done right, hell, all the neighbors would think somebody else did it. Okay, that was good. Joey notes, I love doing these journals because there's nothing else that helps discipline me each weekday to read, do research, critically think, and formulate thoughts. I once laughed at my sister, who is a Lutheran minister, when she told me it takes her about 25 to 30 hours to prepare a sermon for the congregation each Sunday. Well, I'm not laughing now because I have come to realize how much time and effort is involved in the making of Joey's journals. And on this prayer meeting Wednesday, I'd like to salute my sister for living the Christian life and being such a wonderful example to me and all of her flock, and I'll add, incidentally, not believing in surf monkeys. My sister does not believe in Adam and Eve, Jonah and the whale, Noah's Ark, or surf monkeys, or any of those other bullshit fairy tales of the Bible, but my sister does believe in walking the walk and living the life that for which Christ stood. My sister received her doctorate in theology a couple of years ago, and I love and am so proud of her, as are we all. My sister is my only sibling in this world, and I'm so lucky to have her.
I feel so very lucky as well to be part of this Horn family as well. As billable Rick is like the brother I never had. When one of us hurts, we all hurt. When one of us is not feeling well, we're all ailing. Oh, there's Jeffrey again. And when one of us gets a cowbell, we all share a good belly laugh. That's the most irrepressible damn giraffe I've ever heard tell of. No kidding. Somebody has to stop that giraffe before the pun police bell him. I'm just too exhausted. I'm so amazed, Joey adds, by the way you've all rallied around Bob and have already put $6,000 into the GoFundMe page. Bob, to finish out Joey's journal, could you please read John Donne's For Whom the Bell Tolls? Because that best depicts who we are in the Horn family. This has been Joey's Journal for Prayer Meeting Wednesday, the 30th day of December, 2020, with Giraffrey just waiting to ring the New Year's in Georgia. Ossoff Warnock, y'all. January 5th, a scant 6 days away. No man is an island entire of itself. Each is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as if a manor of thine own or thine friend's were. Each man's death diminishes me, for I am involved in mankind. Therefore, send not to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. And Joey and Giraffrey add, so here's the cowbell comeback challenge of $25. If somebody will match $25, then Joey and Giraffrey will double your $25. And that's, it's been a long time since I was reminded of John Donne's work there. That was beautiful. Thank you, Joey, and even you, Giraffe. And thank you very kindly to Mark and to Jeremy for getting us started first past the post. Jeremy took us down to 760. Mark took us down to 740. Elizabeth took us down to 715. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Joey, for the challenge. And so if that challenge is met, we will get down below $700. And in fact, we'll be at 665, which is just $1 less than 666, the magic number, as it were. Fun anecdote. Flavio says, I was in the student union at UW-La Crosse, and we could smoke there back in the 80s, and a girlfriend asked me to light her cigarette. She had big hair, also an 80s thing. Oh, God, I remember. And it was heavy with the Aquanet, and you know what happened. Next thing I know, I'm patting her mane down, which had burst into flames. She was unscathed, but ever since, whenever anybody asked me for a light, I just hand him the lighter. Chivalry is dead because Flavio doesn't care to incinerate his friends. Aquanet. Oh, yes. And isn't that what brings on the rise of the machines? No. That's Skynet. Well, you know, some of the hair got kind of skyward, but... Yes. So, there's that. And thanks to our friends at Eastern States, Pet Express, for meeting Joey and Giraffe's Cowbell Comeback Challenge. And thank you to our buddy Chris, often heard on Friday on the Front Porch. We're down to 655. And Charlene in Rogues Island said, let's get the money hole filled in a little. Here's a $150 challenge. It's met tonight. I'll add 25 more. That's huge. Thank you, Charlene. And that would take us from 655 down to 355. And then just $330 to go. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Charlene. So if there's $150, 10 at 15, 15 at 10, 1 at 150, 2 at 75, 4 at 37.50. I haven't ciphered in a while, but you get the idea. And Roger in Oregon wants to know, if the chat is down, could you say so? I came in late and missed the first 30 minutes. No, the chat's up and running and doing fine as far as I can tell. Because Stockton Larry and Squeaky and Anatole are there. And, of course, pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Bishop, or brother. I almost elevated you to a bishopric. Brother Deacon Steve from Georgistan. Oh, mercy. So it does appear to be working. And now Billable Rick is worrying about the economic implications of the cowbell. If everyone gets a cowbell, then doesn't it make it socialism? But Bob, aren't you a socialist? Oh, I thought you were going to say that if everybody gets a cowbell, then the cowbell has no value, and we're suddenly cast into the realm of Dr. Seuss's The Sneetches. Dear me. Well, at least you didn't go there. But, yeah, I am. I mean, probably more than a socialist when you get right down to it, but shh. I mean, actually, I'm a Marxist. Because, after all, I've seen all the Marx Brothers movies. Yeah, I shouldn't have gone there. That's okay. And by the way, thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs just jumped in on Charlene's fill in the wholesome challenge. Wholesome, get it? And so there's $125 remaining on that. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very kindly. Ralphs just let me know that the Senate is voting to vote on the defense bill veto override. And it could be maybe we ought to check in and kind of lay prayer meeting Wednesday to the side for a second just to, yeah. Okay, that has concluded. The Senate votes to officially begin work on the defense bill veto override. So I guess they've overridden Bernie and the rest of the Democratic caucus. Jesus, these sadistic pricks. Republicans, God Almighty. And apparently, when we talk about what does it mean, when we talk about that $2,000 check that our betters think that America doesn't need, well, the Washington Post noted that in addition to providing more actual cash, about 8.8 million more American families would get money who would have been left out in the cold and generally stiffed in the bill that did pass and get signed into law as a result of means testing in the original so-called non-relief bill. Reporter Rachel Siegel at the Washington Post said the phase-out structure is still the same, but because the check itself is larger, people making up to $115,000 would still get something. The new bill also covers adult dependents. For example, under the stimulus package already signed into law, a family of four making more than $198,000 would get nothing. Under the House plan, the high-income threshold rises to $310,000. In that plan, a family of four making up to $150,000 would receive $8,000. If that same family were making $300,000, they would still get $500,000, which raises the entirely logical issue. Great, as Darlene pointed out the other night, so you made $150,000 in 2019. Well, this is the plague year 2020, and you ain't making that now. Because what's the unemployment rate now? Hint. It's still horrible. It's still at Great Recession and damn near Great Depression levels. Ugh. I despise him. I mean, I do. I despise Mitch McConnell. As we like to say here in the hills, I wouldn't piss in his goddamn mouth if his goddamn guts were on fire. And that's saying something. That's not a nice thing that you wouldn't. Because, you know, when your goddamn guts are on fire, you'll take anything that puts your guts out. Never mind. Too much detail, Bob. As far as ciphering is concerned, Lee in New York reminds me, remember, it's only $1,400. The first $600 is coming with the late signed bill. No one will get $2,000 from the proposed bill, but I think we just heard otherwise. That's, you know, that's how they roll. As far as a Bronx bell is concerned, Lee in New York, who would know of such things, says a Bronx cheer is loud and not a pleasant sound. In my opinion, a Bronx bell would be the hand around the bell instead of the handle and still rung with energy. Ring it, you ring as you want. Wait a minute, so you're saying it would be... Is that a Bronx bell, Lee? Bell, Lee? Don't try that at home. No. And so Lou said he had just tuned in. January 5th, Georgia reminder. We covered that. I read the name of a senator who's going to help the $2,000 filibuster, but I forget. It was a he name. It wasn't Elizabeth Warren. Well, supposedly it had the support of the entire Democratic caucus. Sadly, the entire Democratic caucus did not have enough stroke to get anything done without at least one miserable, rotten, no good, godforsaken Republican or two or three or four getting on board. And so, you know, there we are. Jesus. And you would think that the American people would remember this. Oh my God, it's a monkey on a surfboard. Thank you, Sparky. I needed that. Jesus. Yep, that's Lee in New York said that was exactly his idea. Back to the question of Giraffe versus Mitch. Brother Deacon Asa says, now that Jeffrey wants to ring McConnell's bell, does that make it giraffe on reptile coitus? No, it's giraffe. Wait a minute. It's giraffe on tortoise coitus. It's only getting worse, isn't it? Sometimes we need to just be silly for a little bit. Billable dog on monkey. Christopher's doggy style just drives me bananas. All right, you earned that one. Absolutely. Oh, and as to the surf monkeys from South America, I noted talking to our buddy Dr. John in New Mexico that needs to be a band name right away. And Dr. John replied, with their number one hit, Convergent Evolution is the Law, and the B-side, Talkin' Non-Prehensile Blues. Oh, God. Talkin' Non-Prehensile Blues. Because, you know, those prehensile toes would really make you an excellent surfer. Stop it. Make it end. Stop it. Stop it, Pop. But it's hard to stop sometimes. It really, really is. Because, well, just when you thought the Proud Boys were bad enough, it turns out we have the Proud Girls. No, really. And this isn't like some progressive counter. No. It's not a progressive feminist counter to the Proud Boys. No, no. They're right-wing assholes, too, the Proud Girls. In fact, it's a former mixed martial arts fighter by the name of Tara LaRosa, according to the Daily Beast. She set out to found the Proud Girls alongside the Proud Boys, but the Proud Boys, being the Proud Boys that they are, they responded by telling her, "Don't ride our coattails. Want to support us? Get married, have babies, and take care of your family." Well, at least they operate true to type. An Oklahoma Proud Boy said, "This is a men's club. If you're not in a relationship with a Proud Boy, at worst, you're a groupie." You gotta wonder, did they realize they were talking to a former mixed martial arts fighter who could probably kick the asses of any Proud Boy, or maybe even all of them at once? Not that I'm, well, I mean, okay, I confess. This is one of those situations where it could, my inner Scotsman would come out and say, "Come on, let's you and them fight." And just looking at some of these Proud Boys, I'm thinking, wouldn't take much to take them down. I mean, I think you could probably send a couple of them to their long homes just with a stick of butter. Never mind. And since we were talking, since we had earlier the mask hole COVIDiot who thought that UPS was her, the UPS store was her private residence, let's take a quick ride out to California at a grocery store in not quite Northern California. I now know where the Fairfax district is. It sounds like Marin County to me. Thanks for the geography lessons, Californians. Maggots. No, it's a Los L.A. I didn't know there was a Fairfax district in L.A. too. It's an L.A. area grocery store. So it truly is at a grocery store in Southern California, echoing the great beat poetry of days past. And you, Garcia Lorca, what were you doing down in the fruits and vegetables or whatever it says? The Erewhon Market in the Fairfax district of L.A., and a whole bunch of maggots showed up at the grocery store, pushed their way in, and attacked workers over coronavirus restrictions in the place in the United States that is more on fire than anywhere else in the country. And by the way, yesterday we had the first identified case of the UK variant of the coronavirus in Colorado. And today we got the second verified case in where? Yes, Southern California. Yes, L.A. And so dozens of maggots, I don't know, maybe it's like lining up for a new Bruce Springsteen album like used to happen. God, the line was terrible. Remember when Bruce Springsteen released that live album? It was three discs. And the waiting line was forever. Well, they were waiting. I guess they were waiting in line to try to meet the new new coronavirus variant. Oh, God. Protester Jason Traver said, "We're not here coughing everything, smearing everything. We just want to shop. We want to take our own precautions that we've been doing all of our lives, and we'll be fine." A correspondent for the Daily Beast was there talking to a number of folks witnessing the madness. And one woman who had made sure to come to the grocery store riot in her maggot hat said, "The masks do nothing. That's why you can wear anything. I don't wear underwear over my face. I'll pull off my underwear right now and put them over my face." She must have heard the old joke about what does the inside of Mike Pence's mask smell like, and the answer is, of course, mother's panties. "I don't wear underwear. And I would hope that even the maggots responded to her by saying, "No, no, really, you don't have to, please." And so they chanted And they hooted and hollered their various conspiracy theories. And babbled things like, my body, my choice. Because they think it's cute to steal the slogan of the pro-choice movement that supports the constitutional rights of women to make their own determination about the reproductive systems of their own bodies. Just like they took the cucumbers. Sorry, I got nothing better. I had to steal that from Malloy. Just like the cucumbers babble, save the children, when Save the Children is an actual charity that tries to, you know, save children and not the imaginary children whose blood is being drunk by Illuminati fascist Rosicrucians in the basement of a pizza joint in Washington, D.C. that doesn't have a basement. And it just keeps making my head hurt. Yeah. And at the same time that an idiot was yelling, I don't wear underwear over my face. It's worth noting that 7,181 people were hospitalized in the greater Los Angeles area with COVID-19 just yesterday, Tuesday, the 29th day of December. One person watching all the madness unfold, who was not a COVID-iot mask hole, maggot, said, it's very frustrating because in L.A. right now we have less than 0% capacity ICU beds. The least you could do is wear a mask, and I don't know why you're trying to attack a business that's just trying to survive during the pandemic. Oh, good God. It was described as just a lot of yelling and pushing and antagonism. They had a lot of anxiety. But an individual told the Daily Beast, there was like a smugness, almost a performance art aspect. Well, let's get some gnat sound out of this so we can understand the stupidity in all its ignorant garishness. I like the woman at the very beginning of the clip who says, what the fuck is happening? And of course, they're assaulting an African-American man who's trying to protect the door. Kyle in Kentucky Stand notes, they're right in that it's their right to put themselves in harm's way, but not other people knowingly. Why do right-wingers have such a problem understanding such basic shit? I'm so old, Kyle, I can remember when right-wingers used to loudly preach, your rights end where my nose begins. But I guess it doesn't matter when your nose isn't covered by a mask and you're spewing viral particles. Okay, yep, definitely. That's a cowbell for Randy. A dose full of COVID makes the maggot tree die down. The maggot tree die down. The maggot tree die down. Oh, a dose full of COVID makes the maggot tree die down in the most terminal way. Well, sorry, Charlene. We may not meet the challenge tonight after that unadvised urge to sing. But there yet remains hope, and there's no way I wasn't going to sing that. No, that was brilliant. Thank you, Randy. Thank you. Underwear on the face, Lee in New York says, at least it would catch the feces leaving the mouth. Apologies about dinner. Well, there it went. We just recently crossed the second hour of the program mark, and that means that dinner in the Central Standard Time Zone has just been taken out behind the barn and beaten with an axe. Great googly moogly. Sorry, I had a text from Agnes. She's checking the smoker. There's dinner on it, and I don't want to slow down the program to go and fetch it. Ha, 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 says Kyle. Good one, Randy. Also, Bob, please stop singing. How was I supposed to share Randy's brilliance without singing? Christ, says Kyle. I haven't eaten yet, and I guess I'm not going to now. You know the risks. I mean, Kyle, you do. I know you do. That obnoxious woman, says Jude in the Great Northwest. As a child on summer nights, our neighborhood parents would meet over the fence, simply taking time to talk with each. Sometimes a beer or two would be enjoyed among them. One evening, one of the fathers made the comment, "Well, sometimes they need to be knocked down, knocked directly in the nose. That'll stop the unnecessary rudeness." We kids were surprised, as every neighbor was a calm and caring person, but understood as not one of us would ever consider being so rude as that woman was at the UPS store. It's a whole new world, Jude says, and it is. It is indeed. Yeah, sorry, Kyle, says Lee in New York. Well, thanks, says Billable Rick. You just ruined my coffee break on the Pacific Coast. Back on my head now. Yeah, yeah. Whoa, okay. So I may have damaged Charlene's challenge, but Jeremy says, hey, if we meet Charlene's challenge tonight, I'll throw another 50 on top of it. So that just puts even more emphasis behind it. And there's $125 to go on it. So thank you. Yeah, it is a new world. It's a new world after all. No, you, Ralph, just stop trying to make me sing. I can't help it. And this being prayer meeting Wednesday and all, and seeing as how we just had the Proud Boys telling the Proud Girls to get back in the kitchen and take them damn shoes off, it's been a while since we heard from, yes, Jesse Lee Peterson. Mm-hmm. You may recall the last time we heard from Jesse Lee, he was throwing a fit because he said that Amy Covid Barrett didn't belong on the Supreme Court, one of the few things with which I've ever agreed with Jesse Lee, but for all the wrong reasons. We've got a message coming in from Darlene. Seriously, Bob, forget that she could take him out as a mixed martial arts fighter. What perplexes me, well, makes me want to gag, is the hubris of any Proud Boy thinking that a sane, intelligent woman would want to take him out, let alone marry him or carry his little slug to term. Wait a minute. I don't think take him out. I wasn't meaning take him out in, you know, dating terms, but oh, dear. To steal from John Britovo for a second, you shitting me, says Darlene. Only these fox flag flouting Proud Boys with their beer guts, missing teeth, stupidity, small dicks, and big guns would think, hey, baby, here I is. Come and get me. Puke, barf, gag, vomit, kiss the porcelain bowl. You get the drill. I do. And, you know, among other things, I'm guessing most of your Proud Boys are boys, as they like to use the term, because the Venn diagram of Proud Boys and incels is a single circle. We run across that from time to time here. But back to Jesse Lee Peterson. Observing the results of the recent election, he noticed that a number of women who were Republicans at the same time actually managed to be elected to the high national office, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, the cucumber from Georgia, who will be cucumbering her way through the halls of Congress in the not-too-distant future, or that one Lulu from Colorado who has already secured her right to carry, to pack heat in the halls of Congress. No, really. And oddly enough, Or maybe not. Well, no, everything Jesse Lee Peterson does is odd. Well, Jesse Lee is not happy that there are going to be more Republican women in government.
GOP chairwoman Rhoda McDaniel tweeted yesterday, Republican women were responsible for defeating 10 of the 13 House Democrat incumbents. The Republican Party is in an even stronger position for the future. That's a lie. They need to get rid of Rhoda McDaniel. She's a liar. They have weakened the party by putting all these women in charge.
Now, I can state for the record that not pounding a fifth of bad liquor before starting your program is really the key to successful broadcasting in oh so many ways. What makes it high comedy is when Jesse Lee stumbles over Rona and six or seven other words. And, of course, remember, it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. Let's enjoy that some more.
For the future. Future. That's a lie.
Future,
they
lie.
They need to get rid of Rhoda McDaniel. She's a liar. They have weakened the party by putting all these women in charge.
He had two separate runs at Ronna Romney McDaniel, and he still we get Rhoda McDaniel. And he may have been trying to go for Ronald McDonald, but he just couldn't quite get there because, well, he's a Jesse Lee Peterson of very small brain. Oh, but he's not even half done here. Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. And thank you to Jude in the Great Northwest of Women's Standing. We now have only $115 to go on Charlene's challenge. Fill in the wholesome challenge. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Jude. Robert in Australia reminds us, hey, Bob, it's December 31st, 2020 here in Sydney. The last day of 2020. Thank you, Flying Spaghetti Monster. It's gray and overcast and has been so for the last couple of weeks. All the days are running together into a blur. And I fear 2020 and 2021 will do the same. Just blur together. And there's truth in that, because remember, I have said for over a month now, at least, that 2021 actually won't begin for another 21 days. 2021 won't actually begin until January 20th, 2021, with the inauguration of Joe Biden and the hopeful emergence of this country from the depths of ignorance, hate, bigotry, xenophobia, and outright stupidity that has been the maggot regime. Incidentally, it tickled me to no end this morning when I tuned in my filthy morning habit to find that none other than Mike Barnicle, one of the multimillionaire broadcasters of my filthy morning habit, declared to the eager viewers, of course, 2021 won't actually begin until shortly after noon on January 20th. You're welcome, Mike. You're welcome. Well, credit once in a while would be cool, but it's nice just to know that my words are getting out there. But Robert adds, Melbourne has canceled their fireworks, fearing a super spreader event. And while doctors are calling for an immediate lockdown of the greater Sydney area, fearing the same result, the New South Wales Premier says tonight's Sydney fireworks will go ahead. Access to the harbor foreshore is fenced off, but I doubt that'll stop some people. It's amazing how easily you can trample a fence if you got enough people to do it. And I just received an email from a British record store that I frequent from time to time that they're stopping shipping to the EU. Only for the time being, until they figure out how to ship records to the EU. That's right. They don't know what the new process is or is going to be. Brexit is going to be interesting to watch, to say the least. Robert says, I'm hoping for a better 2021, but it's pretty obvious that stupid is as stupid does, so it might just be 2020 version 2.0. Having said all that, Happy New Year to the Horn Family Community Congregation. Hopefully. I'll be putting on a string of classic comedy films to celebrate the end of 2020. That's a fine idea, Robert. Anything already lined up? Now, you say classics. I mean, I'm thinking Duck Soup, Night at the Opera, Day at the Races. One of my particular favorites, The Bank Dick. What is it? Hotel International with W.C. Fields? Oh, yeah. That looks like, that is a wonderful idea. And get something tasty to bring in the new year with. If not potable, then palatable. Yeah, I got the same question. Ralphs wants to know, can Jesse Lee even talk? I don't think so. And Kim notes, Bob, when and if you were able to issue a best of church night, advertise that last clip. Oh, Kim, we're not even done with Jesse Lee yet. Not by a long shot. Yes, and the reminders come rolling in. Lee in New York says, in my opinion, Barnacle owes you a cowbell. I got one of those. I prefer fungibles. And Randy in PA points out, when he worked for the Boston Globe, Mike Barnacle was widely suspected of committing plagiarism. I don't think it was suspected. If I recall correctly, it was actually, proven. But nonetheless, back to the comedy stylings of Jesse Lee Peterson. One more time, I want to hear him stumble through Ronna Romney McDaniel. Ronna McDonough.
A position for the future. Future. That's a lie.
Future. Future.
They need to get rid of Ronna McDonough. Ronna McDonough. She's a liar. They have weakened the party by putting all these women in charge. It is the strength.
You realize people tune Jesse Lee Peterson in not for the quality of the information he delivers, but rather for the unintentional hilarity.
It's not in the women, it's in the men. Those who return to the Father.
Ooh, I think we missed a gem there. Let's try this again.
They have weakened the party by putting all these women in charge. The strength is not in the women, it's in the men, those who return to the Father. The Republican Party is going downhill fast because they are emulating the Democratic Party. They're not doing what's best and what's right. They're trying to prove something to the Democrats. If the Democrats get a bunch of women, well, the Republicans got to get a bunch of women. Fallen hell. Fallen Satan right into hell. You got to live to regret this. Ronna, is it Ronna Nick? Ronna McDonough is not the one that should be.
That's three. Just like St. Peter denying Christ three times before the cock crowed. That's three McDonoughs. One McDonough, two McDonough, three McDonough. And suddenly Ronald McDonald pops up and never mind. Beetlejuice.
Be running the Democratic Party or whatever she's doing. Chairwoman.
Yeah. Oh, wait, did we miss something? Hold on. I want to make sure we get it all. Absolutely. Hold on.
Hell, following Satan right into hell. You got to live to regret this. Ronna, is it Ronna Nick?
Yeah, Nick
Ronna
doesn't
McDonough
know.
Is not the one that should be running the Democratic Party or whatever she's doing.
Running the Republican Party.
Chairwoman. This woman's blind and crazy.
Blind and crazy. Please, Nick. Nick is apparently his producer. Please, Nick. For the lovers of comedy all over the world, please tell Jesse Lee that Ronna McDonough is a Mormon. We're asking really nicely. I'll keep an eye out for a clip for just because that'll be. She's a moron. What? Beautiful thing. Jesse Lee. Man, I tell you, the last prayer meeting of Wednesday of 2020 is turning out to be a doozy. And thank you to an anonymous friend who has just, let's see, where are we now? We are down to 65 bucks to go on Charlene's Fill in the Wholesome Challenge. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. Clarence in South Carolina, Stan, and parts elsewhere. I don't know if Clarence is on the road or not. Manage their behavior. Bob, I have an idea. There should be a $1,000 fine and a felony charge of attempted bioterrorism. That would make one rethink not wearing a mask. Jobs, credit ratings, and a host of other life-sustaining formalities would be at risk. If you do not manage your behavior, society will. And if I understand Robert in Australia correctly, and I think I do, that's exactly what the Australian authorities are doing, because you can find yourself on the wrong end of a $1,000 fine real quickly, like. Oh, but not us, because Fee-dum. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. How true, how true. So we are well past the halfway mark of the program. And this is, after all, conversation radio. If there's something on your mind, if you'd like to get a bee out from under your bonnet or a burr out from under your saddle, well, you're mightily welcome to join in the conversation. Multiple ways to do that via Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And the stress line, of course, up and running, named for our pal, gone but not forgotten, Bill Mr. Stress Miller, whose birthday will be just shortly after midnight on New Year's Eve, because he was the first baby born in Cleveland in, I believe, 1946, was it, Brother Deacon? Yeah, the stress line, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, gets you into the program. Todd in South Carolina, Stan, asking the question, how can Jesse Lee be that drunk and still awake? Is he an escaped medical oddity from the Mütter Museum? More like an escaped oddity from the old Panther Piss Distillery, but yeah, that's me. Sometimes, says Brother Deacon Asa, I get the feeling that Jesse Lee is a white man doing radio blackface. Sometimes I think he's actually on our side, and he's under deep, deep, deep cover. So, where else to go? Well, there was sad news out of Louisiana, Stan, last night. A newly minted, newly elected member of Congress due to sit down and take office when the new Congress convenes. Well, he won't be doing that. No. Because he's all busy being, you know, dead. Really. I mean, this is some sad shit. He was a Republican, and he was a maggot. And he got the Rona. The Associated Press reporting last night, Louisiana's newest Republican member of the U.S. House, Luke Letlow, L-E-T-L-O-W, has died from complications related to COVID-19 only days before being sworn into office. He was 41. Now, I scanned the right-wing sewers earlier today to see if they were hollering, false flag! Or, wait a minute, false flag! Because he's 40, he was 41. 41-year-olds, we've been told by various and sundry maggots, can't possibly get the Rona and get sick and die. But somehow or another, Luke Letlow was laid low. You know, I wasn't going to leave that alone. Luke Letlow was laid low by the Rona. And in an active class, the lone Democrat in the Louisiana Stan congressional delegation added his name to a statement from others, the rest of them being Republicans, grieving the passing of Luke Letlow. His spokesman, who now isn't going to have a job as his communications director in the Congress, Andrew Botch, issued a statement and said, the family appreciates the numerous prayers and support over the past days, but asks for privacy during this difficult and unexpected time. A statement from the family, along with funeral arrangements, will be announced at a later time. What do you want to bet? The funeral arrangements will involve a full-on funeral. No masks. Lots of loud, noisy grieving in an enclosed space. Yeah. It was December 19th when he was admitted to a hospital in Monroe, Louisiana, because he had tested positive for the Rona. They later transferred him to the Shreveport facility. Jack, in Shreveport, are you familiar with this story? And that's when they transferred him to intensive care and presumably horizontally crucified him. Dr. G.E. Golly of the LSU Health Shreveport was interviewed by The Advocate and said that young Mr. Letlow didn't have any underlying health conditions, otherwise known as comorbidities, that would have made him at any more risk for COVID-19 than anybody else. And yet, there he was. Democratic Governor John Bel Edwards said, COVID-19 has taken Congressman-elect Letlow from us far too soon. I'm heartbroken that he will not be able to serve our people as a U.S. representative, but I'm even more devastated for his loving family. Well, don't worry, John Bel Edwards. He had no intention of serving the people of Louisiana as an elected representative. He was a maggot. He was there to serve his God Emperor, Donald Trump, even if the God Emperor wasn't in the White House anymore. And he was also there to serve the various interests that largely control Louisiana politics. The hydrocarbon lobby being chief among them, the oil industry, the gas industry, the chemical industry. And, you know, anybody who had oodles and oodles and oodles of money to give but now he won't get to. He's survived by his wife, Julia Barnhill Letlow, and two children, and they must certainly be heartbroken. But I would be remiss if I did not note that he was a non-mask wearer, which oftentimes means also not a social distancer. Nancy Pelosi got in on the act, and she said, "May it be a comfort to Luke's wife, Julia, and their children, Jeremiah and Jacqueline, that so many mourn their loss and are praying for them at this time." And that's the right thing to do. It's the right thing for Nancy Pelosi to do. But the thing is, he's just one. Over 7,000 people have died in Louisiana Stan since March, since the Rona began ravaging that state and our nation, since COVID-19 began to stalk our country like a serial killer. He announced that he had a positive test, just like Senator Bill Cassidy and Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser and Attorney General Jeff Landry and Treasurer John Schroeder and U.S. Representative Mike Johnson and U.S. Representative Cedric Richmond all had it. But there's no accounting for what this damn thing will do to a person. And as I read this story, I couldn't stop thinking about that little Eichmann who worked under Alex Azar's office and wrote that memo that said, "All you healthy people, let's get them out there. Let's just get it and get that herd immunity." Young Mr. Letlow was one of the people that little Eichmann wanted to have get the Rona, and it killed him. The Associated Press, trying to display some degree of decorum, doesn't talk about the fact that Luke Letlow didn't wear masks, didn't social distance, didn't take the disease seriously. Because I guess that just feels like piling on. But I think we have to make mention of these things, not as a matter of cruelty or of mocking or of sarcasm or some sort of mordant wit. It has to be noted because somehow this country must learn, those of us who have not yet learned it, that this is an indiscriminate killer, and that not taking the scientific advice comes with horrible consequences. We've just passed Christmas, so let's say that some friend of his who had gone to the great beyond visited him at midnight, Luke Letlow, and said, Luke, no, not I am your father. Now quit that. I'm trying to be serious here. But had visited him and said, "I'm here to tell you that if you don't wear a mask in life, you will soon not be wearing one in death either." I'm doing my best, trying to do some Charles Dickens here. "I didn't wear one in life, and now I wear these chains." Something like that. The question is, would Luke Letlow have taken his advice? Remember, with Scrooge, he more or less flips off Marley and says, "Yeah, fuck off. I had too much to drink, my upset stomach or something." And it takes all three ghosts to finally wake up Scrooge's sense of compassion. And that was just an emotion. In this case, we're talking about waking up the sense, not of compassion, but of concern. The sense of seriousness that this virus damned well deserves. And that so many people aren't taking seriously. You know, when I tell the stories, as I do on this program, of all the out-of-state plates that I see, I mean, if you look at a map of the United States, you'll see that, for instance, if you, and I've never done it, and maybe, you know, Ron in the far frozen north can tell us something otherwise, but he's coming from somewhere else. But I-79 terminates in Erie, Pennsylvania. And so if you're headed to, say, the sunny beaches of Myrtle or Hilton Head or on south to Florida, you're gonna come through my neck of the woods, because there's basically a straight line. I-79 comes down from Erie, and of course the Pennsylvania Turnpike intersects I-79. So if you're coming from somewhere else, you might cross Pennsylvania and get on 79 and come on down, because you really don't want to fight the traffic on I-95. And as you come down through West Virginia, about 100 miles in, U.S. 19 jumps off from I-79. I-79 goes on and terminates in Charleston, West Virginia. But you can jump off at exit 57 and take U.S. 19, which is also a four-lane highway, and it'll take you right through lovely little Fayetteville, America's coolest small town. And it's the first place that offers a bunch of nice decent restaurants that aren't, you know, McDonald's and Wendy's, Taco Hell. And so a lot of people stop in Fayetteville. And so it was that yesterday I was hankering for a biscuit. Okay, I was just hungry. I never hanker for Tudor's Biscuit World. But I was hankering for a biscuit, we'll say. And I ran through the drive-thru, got a couple of things to bring home, and as I'm sitting there waiting for my meal to be delivered, like I said before, I see four cars. Florida, 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 Georgia. Now, maybe they're coming home from having visited their families in the north for Christmas or something. But I've been seeing them in greater profusion this year than I've ever noticed them before. All year long. And it is statistically impossible that not one of them has the Rona, especially cars with plates from states that do not take COVID-19 seriously and whose Republican leadership has done everything possible to downplay it, even as it ravaged their states. And so I've gotten to the point when I see Florida, 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 Georgia, the first thing that comes out of my mouth is, go the fuck home. And why are you here? Because even if you assume that they didn't come here for the, and people are still climbing rocks and everything, it's become pretty much year round. And that's cool. We got great rock climbing, hiking, whatever. But even if you assume that they didn't come here specifically, that they were just passing through and passing their Rona along as they went, then you have to wonder, why the hell did you go somewhere for Christmas? Again, it's statistically impossible that every out-of-state plate that I see in Fayetteville is somebody who's either already had it or is taking precautions, because even if you've already had it, and even if you're taking precautions, you still shouldn't be on the goddamn road driving to PA or New York or Ohio or Michigan or Indiana or where the hell ever. You should have been at home for Christmas so that hopefully you can have another Christmas. And so my hope is that when 2021 begins in 21 days. Joe Biden, as gentle and nice as he's tried to be, will finally understand that that there's a big part of this country that cannot be sweet-talked into not killing themselves and others. We are going to have to impose consequences if we are to survive this thing. I don't want to die from this thing, and I don't want anybody in our community to die from this thing. We've already had people get sick with it, and it's horrible. It's not, oh, I had a fever for a couple of days. And it's not the bullshit that they spew on the for-profit media where they say, some people have hardly any symptoms at all. Well, I've known a lot of people who have had it, and I haven't known one who had no symptoms at all. Everyone I know who has had it has told me, without fail, that it was a horrifying, terrifying, miserable, awful experience. So, honest to goodness, if maybe if Joe won't do it, maybe Kamala, Vice President Harris, will finally talk to the nation like a bunch of grown-ups, even though a bunch of the nation apparently aren't. But my heart goes out to all of the 330, 340,000 people who will not see 2021 come in. And I'm so sorry that so many of them didn't take this thing as seriously as it deserves to be taken. I'm so sorry so many of them listened to that brain-damaged, narcissistic psychopath in the White House when he lied and lied and lied and lied and lied. And they died and died and died and died and died. As Jeremy in Vermont points out, for fuck's sake, Dwayne The Rock Johnson had it just after Halloween, and he's in top shape and said it was scary and rough. Yeah. James in Illinois points out the Rona's on the road. Regardless of their state's governors, if they're on the road, they aren't taking it seriously. Governors need to start getting more proactive, and someone needs to take these fucking Proud Boys down. Two solutions in one. But the disease is literally traveling along the interstate system. And so when I got done at Tudor's yesterday and I pulled into the Little General to get gas, because, I mean, I was on empty. If I hadn't been, I wouldn't have stopped. And I look next to me, and there's a car with New Jersey plates, and I'm like, fuck. And so I checked my mask. I checked my gloves. I hurried in. I paid for my gas. I hurried back out, and I pumped. And there's the, no offense to our friends in New Jersey, but there's the guy from Jersey. No mask, standing there and huffing and puffing and chuffing. And I'm sitting there wondering how long I can hold my breath. I threw away that mask as soon as I got away from there and started fresh. I did everything except do a shot of hand sanitizer. I'm not quite to the point of taking Donald Trump's fucking advice yet. But Colorado, Southern California, Lou tells me it was San Diego, not LA. It's already here. It's probably already been here. It may be why this thing is spreading like it is, as badly as it is. And meanwhile, I'm driven half to distraction by the knowledge that the monoclonal antibody treatments from Regeneron and Eli Lilly are sitting in hospital pharmacies roughly 80% unused. Please. Like I said, I don't want anybody to get this, and I don't want anybody to need that stuff, but if you get it and you go to the hospital, as shitty as you may feel, stand on your head if you have to and say, give me those goddamned antibody cocktails and be quick about it. Well, you know, shut up! Get the IV, give it to me. If it's good enough for Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani and Ben Carson, it's good enough for me. I don't mean to sound panicky. And it's not because of the people in this community aren't taking precautions. It's the ones who aren't. And it is getting more and more difficult to avoid them. It's like Paul from Parts Unknown said, we may get to the point where it's 1 in 5. And holy shit, what does that mean? Thank you to Roberto. We are now down to $50 to go on Charlene's challenge, and that's tremendous. Thank you so much, Roberto. Yeah, Ralphs, that was either last night or the night before. Yeah, the antibody cocktail isn't being prescribed and people aren't asking for it. Wall Street Journal story from the news section, not the opinion page. Brother Deacon Asa says, start doing what we did here. Cars without estate plates get vandalized. And laughing. But see, we're once again, this virus exposes the fundamental weaknesses of our constitutional system of governance. Because while Boston had no problem, as we talked about last night, Boston had no problem closing its roads and keeping people in while they immunized against smallpox in 1776. The people who profess to be patriots in their vein are out there saying, well, I don't wear my underwear on my face. See, that's because the framers, the being originalists, they didn't wear underwear. God Almighty. So let me try to calm myself down a little bit. Let's go over and check in with John in Central PA. Hey, John.
Hey, Bob. What's going on?
Oh, just trying not to have a hissy. That's all.
Oh man, I'm right there with you. I mean, like. This whole thing, you know, the whole thing with Congress and the checks, it's a scam. It's a complete scam. Like the fact that they're saying that we can't get that money when, like, you know, you got countries that are like super small, like a quarter of the size of us and a quarter of the size of our GDP and all of that. And tax revenue, all of it. And they can pay their people like $2,000 a month. And I know, I realize they have way less people, but I don't know. I think we could manage it. We're just, it's a big scam. And there is a lot of people who still go along with
it. Oh, yeah, right. And you got Moscow Mitch out there saying that giving Americans $2,000 checks would only help rich Democratic pals.
Yeah. I know, like, and that, it's obvious projection, I can't believe it. I can't believe somebody is so blatantly evil. I mean, it's one thing to be evil behind closed doors like that. And I know evil, like Malloy will always say, oh, evil is a religious term. Okay. So let's use depraved. Same thing. Right. I mean, like to be this overtly like sinister, I mean, I guess it's because he knows half of the country is just as sinister as he is or something, or supports that kind of depravity. But, I mean, it's just I'm speechless. And I'm not going to lie, like, every now and then, even without Mitch McConnell being in the news like this, every now and then I'll call up his office, get the voicemail, and just go nuts and call him everything other than a man on the voicemail, because I 2016. He is a tyrant of the highest order. God, he's a tyrant. And it's funny because the other day, a Trump supporter that I know for a fact is a Trump supporter, I heard him off in the background as I'm walking out of the locker room go, "Who's this Mitch McConnell and why is he blocking my $2,000? Trump wants it." And that's all I heard, because I was leaving work and I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, you support Donald Trump and you don't even know who Mitch McConnell is.
And there, but there, in many ways, John, is the answer. They don't know that we are, and have been since about 1981, so deprived of civic education. I mean, that's why Dr. Bill's program is called the Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility, because sure. Civics is responsibility. And we've got tens of millions, if not hundreds, 100 million or more Americans who are utterly ignorant of the fact that they have a responsibility. It ain't all rights. Some of it's responsibilities. I mean, we make people who want to be citizens of this country take a fairly grueling test that most Americans couldn't pass. You know, it's not all who's buried in Grant's tomb and what color was George Washington's white horse.
I like that. That's a good one. But yeah, I know. I mean, like, I don't know. I couldn't pass it. I'm sure of it. And that's why a lot of times, and I hate to say this, but sometimes people who aren't from here seem to be more patriotic than a lot of Americans. Like my boss that was on second shift, that I told you, I think last time we talked, I just came from second shift for work. And the guy that was my boss is a fairly young guy, and he's from, I think, Brazil. No, not Brazil. Somewhere in South America. I forget what he said. But he really has this like appreciation for America that I myself have never had. Like, I remember him telling me one time, I was like, yeah, I mean, if I get a better job offer somewhere else, I would probably take it. You know, I just told him that straight up. And he goes, oh yeah. He's like, America, it's a free land. And the way he said that, it had juice behind it. You know what I mean? Enthusiasm. This is a free land. And I disagreed with him. I didn't tell him that to his face or anything, but like I disagreed with him. I thought, no, it's not a free land. It just isn't.
It's probably a much more free place, John, than where he came from.
Yes. And I appreciate that.
And by that metric, it's probably really free. But when you get here and you've been here long enough and you learn the ugly realities, you know, I referenced our buddy Dr. John earlier. I remember a long time ago when he said, you know, are we really going to define freedom in the United States by the number by the number of breakfast cereals we can choose from? Because that's apparently one of the metrics that too many Americans use, alongside, you know, oh, look, the cable's still on.
Yep.
It can all disappear like smoke.
Well, some of it has.
Sure it has.
Some of these right-wingers, like, they have took rights from people and used it for themselves. The right to go into stores and not wear masks, a mask or anything, and not get fucked with because the store wants their money or doesn't want the trouble.
No, but that's, you know, I mean? Again, that's where I get lost, because there's nobody in this country who has not seen the sign, no shirt, no shoes, no service.
Right.
And if you walk in without a shirt or shoes, you're not amazed when they say, hey, can't come in like that. Oh, okay, sorry, man, I forgot my shirt. You know, it's hot outside, it's July, whatever. They're going to put a shirt on.
Donald Trump,
a mask is somehow different from a shirt and in what way? And the only way, John, is because they have been preached to by deliberately malignant voices that their freedom's somehow being infringed. I mean, I desperately want to. You know what a good thought experiment would, or not? No, this would be a great real world experiment. Let's take that grocery store in the greater LA area. Let's say you've got your mask on and your shirt and your pants on, but you go in barefoot. Let's say you're a maggot. Right. And let's say you're a maggot. Sorry, not insulting you.
I don't know.
Are they going to be amazed and holler, but my freedom? When I say, I'm sorry, buddy, you're going to at least have to put some fucking flip-flops on.
Now they will, though. You know what I mean?
Right. Now they will. That's precisely my point.
Yeah. Right. That's what I'm saying. They took rights that do not. And you know what? They get away with it. I called. There's a grocery store that's around here that's similar to your Kroger. We don't have that up here, but I don't think in my area, at least. It's called Giant. Maybe they do have some of these.
Oh, Giant Foods? Are you talking about Giant Foods or Giant Eagle?
Giant Foods.
Okay, because Giant Eagle's Western PA, or was.
Okay. Well, maybe it's the same company, maybe, or I don't know. But yeah, like it's a good store. It's a nice store. The prices aren't terrible. And there's an excellent selection. I like their deli selection too, but they do have a sign outside and they're supposed to have people at the door telling people to take a mask and stuff. But I see sometimes people that don't have them on. So I got to wonder about this, like, wait a minute. So they just letting these people, like, it's not even that many people. And I told them, I actually called up one time. I was like, I've been coming here for like 10 years. Like, what if I just say I'm done? We're coming here. Are you going to really give up, you know, a reliable customer that spent a lot of money here weekly? You know what I mean? For basically the worst dredges of society, you know, and they really did not care. They're like, I'm sorry to hear that, sir. I'm sorry that we feel that way, but we can't force people to wear it. It's company policy. So right there you go. And I just thought, like, wow.
But there's bad lawyering. It's bad lawyering. Because the fact of the matter is, how to put this? Businesses have liabilities. If you are in the business of inviting the public into your establishment, and I think Steve and Darlene and Lou and Billable will all agree with me, you are involved in, you know, you're involved in commerce, you're inviting the public into your establishment, you have the highest duty of care to prevent your customers from becoming injured. For instance, that little fold-out yellow sign, one side says, caution, wet floor. The other one says, cuidad, piso mojado. Means the same thing. Yeah. You put that up because the floor is slickety, and you don't want one of your customers going slip, trip, fall, go, boom, break arm. And then, because if that happens and you don't have the sign up, you're pretty well on the hook.
Okay.
And you know, a jury or a court of competent jurisdiction is not going to ask any questions beyond, hey, did you warn them about the wet floor? Well, no, we didn't have the sign out yet. Pay. Okay, so if you as a business have a duty of the highest duty of due care and there's a viral pandemic going on and you want to stay in business, then you have damned little choice but to protect the majority of your patronage. And you do that, you know, no shirt, no shoes, no service has nothing to do with style or not wanting to see bare, naked beer bellies or or toe fungus, okay? It's because those are disease vectors.
Right.
And it is by virtue of observing public health laws, the flouting of which can land you in serious legal jeopardy and liability. That's why those signs exist. And so when...
And that's why these...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say that's why these stores, basically, that's why they have these signs out that say that a mask is required. That's to cover their ass legally. So I can't sue their asses.
Right, but if you don't, if you don't enforce it, then you're still exposed. So the people at that grocery store in Southern California, the people at wherever that UPS store was, they were doing it right. The woman was in the store, so they could not lay hands on her, and she wasn't wearing a mask, so why would you want to anyway? It's kind of the conundrum I was in with the guy who coughed on me and stuck out his tobacco crumb-covered tongue at me. Part of me, Neanderthal me, this is the second program in a row with reference to Neanderthals, Neanderthal me wanted to get all up in his face and stomp some sense into him. But sensible me, who did not want to go to the local regional jail where COVID is burning, said, let's just get the fuck out of here. And so the UPS store did the right thing. They called the cops. The cops came in, and she tried to, you know, she tried to lawyer with the cops. And unless you are a white woman, trying to lawyer with the cops is a horrible idea. Yet somehow or another, the woman was not down on the ground pawing at her eyes because of the goddamn pepper spray in them. Because the cops in that instance were trying to avoid escalating an incident. It seems as though maybe they were properly trained or something. But this flummoxes me. And it doesn't just flummox me from the standpoint of stupid governments, as James in Illinois pointed out. It's the failure. I mean, you tell me. I know it's real easy to get kind of babbly and incoherent trying to talk about legal concepts, but has anything that I've run past you, is it confusing? Is it incomprehensible in any way?
It's pretty straightforward.
Okay, thank you. So where in the country are the people making these explanations? Why is it one person on an internet-based radio program who doesn't even practice law is the one who's sitting here explaining these things? Where are the public health departments? I mean, when I phoned that one in, the place should have been probably at least shut down for a day because of the potential for exposure. But they won't take those actions because they're stymied by people like Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice. It's intensely frustrating to me.
Yeah, I mean, like, that, and it's because of, maybe this is a bad, like, phrase or something, but yesterday after, you know, I called up this grocery store and complained about the mask stuff. Well, after you got off the phone, I figured the phrase that came to my mind was callous indifference. You know what I mean?
Also known as deliberate indifference.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's just like everybody's this way, it seems. You know, it's weird because like you hear people at work talk about, oh, I could really use this. It's $2,000 or whatever, so I can go, you know, buy this and buy that and get me this and get me that. And they just don't seem to give a damn about the people who are suffering. I'm not saying that they should give everything they have to people, you know, like for charity, whatever. They can do whatever they want. But you know what I mean, though? Like people, like, you know, live in different worlds in this country, man. Like, it's, I guess it's, that's what happens in a polarized country. But, yeah. I mean, I don't know. But it does infuriate me when I see people without masks, just for the simple fact that they're so arrogant You know what I mean? But I'm also sort of glad because then, you know, they just exposes them for being assholes and probably improbable maggots.
But, you know, you're kind of hipping me to an idea, John. And that idea is, you know how the mask holes and COVIDiots were running around with their little cards that said, hi, I have a condition that I don't have to tell you about that prevents me from wearing a mask because HIPAA and ADA?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, last summer or so.
What if somebody was to start printing cards in the various states, and when you see somebody without a mask, you hand them the card that says, hi, we have a mask mandate in this state, and you, as the operator of a business which invites the public into its premises, have a duty of the highest care for your customers. By letting someone without a mask run around your store, you are violating that duty and subjecting yourself to liability from anyone who gets sick.
That sounds like a pretty good idea to me.
Maybe it would make a difference. And maybe if it has references to the state health code, things like that, it would work. You know, because and you know, you could go on and say, by the way, I noticed that you know, the card, hell, front and back, maybe. Maybe it on the back it says, I noticed that you had a sign telling people to wear masks, but you did not have a sign warning people that your business may be afloat with the coronavirus and that they enter at their own risk. Your failure to warn also subjects you to legal liability. Because that's another theory of liability in civil cases. You know, you can have somebody. I worked on a case when I was just a little baby law student, and a judgment was rendered for hundreds of thousands, if not more than $1 million, because the manufacturer of a piece of equipment had not put a 50-cent sticker on a piece of metal that would have saved a human being's life. And it was an easy argument for the brilliant lawyer to make in front of the jury. All they had to do was put a 50-cent sticker right here that says, don't do this. And my client's husband would still be here, and you wouldn't. We wouldn't be sitting here arguing this case. Jury walks out. Hour or two later, they come back, you know. They elected a jury foreman. The jury foreman took the jury form, the verdict form, wrote the number one, and then wrote zeros until his wrist cramped.
Huh. So they could do that?
And that verdict was upheld.
Oh, wow. Oh, so the jury can choose verdicts in civil cases?
Yeah, I mean, the jury hears the evidence, and then the jury gets instructed, and then the jury sits down and figures out, one, are they liable? If the answer is yes, how much do they owe? Because juries can't bring people back from the
sentences.
Dead. Pardon?
Right. I meant to say sentences. Could juries issue sentences?
With the exception of capital punishment in jurisdictions where the jury decides whether or not to kill somebody, juries cannot impose sentences.
Okay, all right. So
the judge does that.
They can't. All right, but they can still choose the amount that
in a civil suit, which is not criminal, the jury can determine the amount of money that the defendant must pay for their breach of their duty.
Okay. Wow. I figured that was like a sentence. You know what I mean? Well, I guess not. So.
No, it's the distinction between civil cases and criminal cases.
All right. So that's not a thing in civil case. All right. See, I'm really not. I used to watch a lot of Law and Order and all that kind of shit.
Dum-dum.
I wanted to be a cop or something, you know, at one time. But, you know, I got into smoking pot, and I figured they probably wouldn't like that, so I just got into something else. But kind of glad I didn't, to be honest with you. What a depressing You know, I mean,
I think I know that Billable Rick practices and Steve practices. One of the most exhausting things about it is that nobody ever walks into your law office and says, "I'm having the best day of my life. Help me make it better." They walk in with their little, little stomped, beating hearts in their hands, and they say, "I'm so fucked. Can you unfuck me?" And you pat them on their little heads and say, "Well, you know, I can't guarantee any result, but, you know, by God, if you've got the right kind of money, I'll do my best."
Has Steve or Rick ever been a prosecutor before?
Billable was an assistant U.S. attorney.
Wow.
An assistant federal prosecutor, if I'm speaking correctly. I was a little pissant county prosecutor.
Wow. So the people that he was prosecuting had to have been like, "This guy's a really nice guy."
No. Nobody ever says that about their prosecutor.
But he just
fucking
a
asshole.
Nice guy. I can't see him being a dick. I don't know.
You don't have to walk in and look at the defendant and go, "You suck." You just go about your business.
Yeah. But it's like, you know.
You know, I had a guy one time, you know, had him in court, and he walked out of court and went over to the gun store and bought 400 rounds of ammunition and said, "Yeah, by God, I'm getting these for that fucking prosecutor."
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
You found out about it? Did the gun store owner tell you?
Yeah.
He said that?
It's where I bought my guns, too.
Oh, my.
It's a small town.
Oh, wow. You should write a book, man. Like, you should, like, about, like, your life, you know, just kind of like an autobiography, just sort of similar to what Roy did.
No, let's don't and say we didn't.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd just be, you know, like, because, yeah, all that, like, about.
Yeah, the compelling case of the burgled biscuit. Oh, people would line up to read that one.
It's funny because this morning show. I really think you would like this guy on this morning show that I listened to from Central PA. Maybe Randy, I don't know if Randy's into rock music, but it's the rock station, 105.7 The X.
105.7 The X, rock and roll. Yeah, I could probably do that.
That's pretty much how they do it. Yeah, that's pretty much how they do it, too. Exactly how you just did it. The guy that's like sort of the host, the main host of the morning show, named is Nipsey, and like he doesn't have his voice isn't like radio, you know how you say like he's got a voice made for print or whatever. It's kind of like
that's largely reserved for Mark Levin, but you know,
it's kind of like that though. Like he has a real like almost nasally like. Weird type of voice, but he's really talented though. Like at first he annoyed me, but after a while he's really, really, I've realized like, man, this guy's talented. And he's like got a lot of energy, and I feel like you would
hang. Oh, everything this program isn't exhausted and opening the mic. No, I'm
yeah,
kidding.
Well, there you go.
Steve in New York answers your question. No, I was never a prosecutor. I appealed a conviction for a person once, and after he threatened to shoot me, I resolved never to involve myself with the criminal justice system again.
Oh, wow.
A lot like the description of Atticus Finch from To Kill a Mockingbird, in which it is related that Atticus Finch gave up the criminal law after having defended a man accused of murder who insisted on asserting the affirmative defense of the sorry bastard had it coming. And, you know, after that, no more. And then that's how he gets roped into another criminal case. Yeah. If you've never read it, you really should.
What is it again?
To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee.
Okay. Yeah. I have not read it.
The movie's pretty true to the book. And of course, and it's got To Kill a Mockingbird has all kinds of white savior problems, and you have to read it as being, you know, 1935 Alabama that you're reading with 2020 eyes.
Well, hell, you know, if you watch even like shows that were considered progressive at the time, like I don't know, like anything, from like the 90s, they have white savior, you know, issues.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, there hasn't been like a, I don't think they started putting people of color as the actual main characters until now, maybe 2010s or something. Like, I mean, really, maybe I'm exaggerating on that, but yeah, it's, they've been, Hollywood, you know, has been, has not been the best either.
No. Hey, let me just throw this out there. There's 30 minutes remaining in the program. I just had a note from Jeremy in Vermont saying, my pointing finger is itching to push send on my extra offer. How much do we have left to let that happen? We are $50 away from completing Charlene's challenge, which will bring an extra $25 on top of the $150 from Charlene, which will then in turn bring an extra $50 from Jeremy in Vermont. So that's a big deal for anybody out there who might. Five people that have $10 laying around, 10 people with five laying around, one at 50, two at 25, four at 12, 50, et cetera. So I just needed to. By the way, John, you just got a lovely note from Jude in the Great Northwest. Such a cogent dialogue between you and John.
Nice.
Jude says, I just brewed up a cup of River Moon coffee in my Horn coffee cup, the Keep It Lit blend. And sends a picture of her Horn coffee mug. And remember, just as anybody who kicks in $120 or more to the GoFundMe will receive a Horn coffee mug. And they're 15-ouncers, and they're heavy-duty, dishwasher-safe. And I'm going to sign each and every one with a Sharpie on the bottom, and hopefully you won't put it in the dishwasher. And I don't know, maybe it'll be a commemorative. The autograph is not the important part, but it comes with. But...
Damn, man. I wish I had $120, but I'll tell you, I got $10 for you, though. So,
well, thank you, John. Thank you very kindly. So we're at 40.
Yeah.
And by the way, you got a note from Lou, who says, I'm in the Harrisburg area. Please extend my greetings to this gentleman, John from Central PA. So,
awesome.
Lou says, hey.
Awesome. Hi, Lou. You know, like, I was going to call in or write in about something about Lou a couple of months ago from, like, the summertime. We were talking a lot about the unicorn spark or fart crowd and stuff. And Lou had mentioned that he, you know, voted for Jill Stein in 2016 in California. Now, I'm not talking about people who, I'm not begrudging anybody who votes third party, like, especially if you're in California.
Hey, look, I love all Republicans who vote third party.
Right. Exactly. You know, but you know, I mean, like, I don't include, you know, people like Lou and that crowd. I'm talking, when I say like the dumb left and stuff, I'm talking more like people who have platforms that have the ability to cause real harm and have caused harm. So that's who I'm talking about. I was going to like write in about that, but I just kind of forgot about it and stuff. But yeah,
well, I mean, look, here's part of the reality in West Virginia. You know, seven out of ten West Virginians voted for Nitwit Nero, but. We also have a purity left who can occasionally be convinced to vote the right way, but but spend more of their energies hollering, goddamn Democrats, or what's the official phrase? Goddamn neoliberal establishment shills. They spend more time bitching about the Democratic Party than they do paying attention to the hell that's being unleashed by the Republicans. And therein lies the problem. And so we went down to 40 with you, John. We're down to 30.
Oh, did you go through? Wait, hold on. Maybe I didn't finish.
No, I didn't finish.
I got distracted.
We got it down to 30. You took it down to 40. James in Illinois took it down to 30. And Kevin, thank you, Kevin. And Kitty just finished it out and took it a little bit to the good. So that wipes out the challenge. And, oh, gosh. So we are close to finishing out 2020. Not quite there yet. We'll hopefully be able to finish up tomorrow. So thank you very kindly, Kitty and Kevin. And thank you, John. Thank you, James. Thank you very kindly to Jeremy and Charlene and Jude and everyone and Roberto and Mark and I think Ralphs. Thank you all so very much. I was just pulling that off the top of my head, so if I missed one, I apologize. And thank you to our anonymous friend Thank you. Thank you so very, very much for all of that. Steve in New York says, Republicans who vote third party, I support them. I encourage them. I will always be there for them. No, man. No, man. You can't go voting for those rhinos, man. They're not true conservatives. You need to vote third party. Right.
Dude, I hope that happens. I really hope that happens.
Well, apparently there's, I mean, there are a significant number of pouting maggots in Georgia who are either going to cross, either or will cross out the names of Kelly Offler, Waffler, Loffler, and debate perfidu debate chicken, and they're going to write in Donald Trump's name, or they're not going to vote, or they're just, you know, yeah, hell yeah.
God, I hope so, man. We need this. We need to take this Senate. And the thing that's really, you know, kind of shitty is the fact that we will barely have a majority. We really won't have a majority in the Senate. We'll just have, you know, Vice President Harris come in. And I hope she does, you know, revoke her powers or whatever, retain her powers in the Senate, like you were saying, if they do hang on to that majority. I hope they do that, if she does do that. Because I always wondered why, you know, like, and ironically, Joe Biden, back when they were blocking Merrick Garland, I thought, isn't Joe Biden like the president of the Senate? Why can't he just go in and hold the have them hold the hearings? I guess it's not that easy.
No, it can be done. It's just that the government tends to run on tradition, and what actually the whole majority leader thing began in the, I think, FDR administration, John, when his vice president delegated the authority to a leader of the majority group, which were Democrats. It worked. And, well, you know, who wants to be there every day, right? And that's actually how that system developed.
I wondered, like, I always wondered if it's even, like, legal. Like, does it even – I guess they do have mentioned a majority leader in the Senate in the Constitution.
It ain't.
Okay, I thought
majority leader's not in the Constitution.
Yeah, okay, so, I mean, you would know. Well, I mean, come on, man. Why are we letting this asshole do what the hell he wants?
That's a damn fine question. And, you know, hopefully somebody has at least pitched the idea to Biden and Harris, because it's just a tradition. The same as the filibuster. It's just a tradition. It is by no means a matter of law. Now, things like the the Electoral College, that's constitutional. The apportionment, constitutional. So you've got that's a miserable process trying to amend the Constitution. But that's another one of those things, John. I don't know. Why, given the fact that Andrew Jackson was the first one to start pissing and moaning about the Electoral College, why nobody ever took it up and said, you know, especially after 1865. Because after 1865, if you really, really, really honest to God wanted to be able to secure the rights of recently freed Americans, getting rid of the fucking Electoral College would have been the smartest thing to do.
I wonder why. Yeah, you're right. I think it's so dumb. Like, obviously it's dumb, but like, and some of it makes a little bit of sense too, though. Having to win the majority of America as a whole. You know what I mean? That's what makes sense a little bit about it. But other than that, it's complete junk. And you're right. I wonder why. Like, they got around to making alcohol illegal, right?
Right. So,
yeah,
some of it, I mean, I hate to ascribe it to it, but some of it's just laziness. Because, again, it comes back to something else that we've talked about. How is it that we got the 25th Amendment that allows the Congress to set up a commission on presidential fitness in 1965, and from 1965 to 2020... Nobody in Congress ever said, you know, we probably should do one of those.
Yeah, there's a lot of a worship of like decorum, it seems like, you know what I mean?
Right. Because if you throw all tradition out the window, it's going to be hard to get anything done. But
yeah. And that too. Yeah. I think an actual president should be the one to do it. You know what I mean? To push for it and introduce it to Congress. Say, hey, look, you know, I'm not trying to say that I'm crazy or anything, but we should have a commission right now. I know I'm the president, but then, you know what I'm saying?
If I dare say, he's said a lot of good things, Biden has so far. He's been very inclusive. I'm not sure if he said it yet, but it's at some point in time, I'd love to hear it in the inaugural address. It is time to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. That would be huge.
Here.
That would be huge.
It absolutely would. Yeah, that, and we might as well go to town and start and do that one first, and then, you know, get rid of Electoral College. There's another one that I wanted to, but forget what it was. I wanted to introduce it, you know, but maybe it's something about to do with marijuana. I don't know. But it's funny because Cenk Uygur, you know who that is, and he's not terrible. I mean, like, he could be a lot worse. But he, back a while back, would always have these videos about, he would say things like, he wants a constitutional convention, right? And,
Take me there. Article 5 convention of the states bullshit. What is it? They had some pack some years ago that, you know, I had to deconstruct two or three times. It was like the Wolf Nipple Chips pack or something. I forget what it was.
I think it's Wolf Pack. Yeah.
And you know, let's have a convention of the states. Aren't you the clever one?
Right. Well, no, he thinks that some Democrats will say, like, well, the Republicans can open up a convention. They're going to completely rewrite the Constitution. Right. And I'm wondering if, like, I want to ask Dr. Bill if that's true or not, because Cenk Uygur seems to think that that's not true.
He says, you know, we're just going to have a limited agenda, and then we're going to go in and we're going to check this off and check that off. And he doesn't understand that the first order of business will be to make sure that any Democrats, liberals, progressives, Greens, what have you, shut the fuck up. That'll be order of business number one. Order of business number two will be to do exactly, because see, there's historical precedent for this, John. Once upon a time, the country was run by something called the Articles of Confederation. And the Articles of Confederation said the only way you could change the Articles of Confederation was with the unanimous consent of every state. Well, James Madison tried once and failed in Annapolis, and then they tried a second time. And, you know, it's there in the Federalist Papers. It's there in the history of all of this. He told us exactly what they did. He went in, held a convention, gaveled it into session, and said, fuck the Articles of Confederation. This here is a constitutional convention now, and all bets are off. And you know how we said we were only going to tinker with a couple of things? We're rewriting it all. And that was James Madison. It's not like this is guesswork to understand what happens when a constitutional convention gets gaveled in, because whatever promises have been made are over, because the rules are over. A constitutional convention makes up its own rules and is bound by none that previously existed.
And that's why we had the Constitution to begin with, right? Rather than just like you just said. I mean, I try to tell the people, but they don't listen. Because I learned that from this show and he's Dr. Bill, right?
Yeah, Dr. Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
If not the most brilliant man I know.
Yeah, hell yeah, he really is, man. I always wanted to call in or write to ask a bunch about stuff like this and other things. Like Tom Hartman said, what did he say? Oh, he has a theory that you could legally and constitutionally rotate Supreme Court judges back into the federal system, because he said it doesn't specifically say that Supreme Court justices have to have a lifetime appointment on the Supreme Court specifically. Now, I don't know. I mean, I'm wondering, like, what do you think? I've never got around to asking you that question.
I am deeply skeptical of that. Especially if the final word on that is going to be from people who already have jobs on the Supreme Court.
Okay, right, that's true.
Now what you can do is you can introduce legislation relating to the size of the court in the Congress. That is strictly the province of the Congress. The Congress can determine how many Supreme Court justices there are. And if it passes both houses and it gets signed by the president, there we are. You can't reduce the number of justices because you kind of could, but you'd have to say, okay, we're going to go from 9 down to 7. And the way we're going to do that is the next two justices who die will not be replaced. You could do that, but that gets you nowhere. What you want is to increase the number. You know, this is what the Republicans were pissing and moaning about over the election. So they're going to pack the court. No, packing the court is what already happened.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I tried to tell them, you know. And I understand that too. But Tom Hartman has another theory, though. And I kid you not, he literally said this on air. He said, if Joe Biden wins, he's like, since he's immune from prosecution, he could go in there, mow down the conservative wing of the court, Supreme Court, resign, let Kamala Harris pardon him, and then Kamala Harris can appoint new Supreme Court.
Okay, I'm gonna share something with you, and I'm gonna keep the correspondent's name anonymous here, because I'm not trying to start a war.
I'm not ragging on him at all.
I'm talking about.
I kind of like Tom Perrin.
Well, what our anonymous correspondent says, unless he tells me to say otherwise, or they, or she, referencing what you're talking about right now, Tom Hartman is a bag of wind. He won't touch certain topics at all. And he has an elitist fundamentalist view of law talk about white privilege.
Oh, okay. I wonder how rich he is too. He ain't eating
beans. But that's not my complaint. I know that the day that he referred to Phyllis Schlafly as a national treasure, I kicked furniture, kicked the door, opened the door, ran out the door, ate some dirt, and ran the nearest rabbit I could find. Phyllis Schlafly, a national, and you know, he wasn't being humorous, being genteel.
You gotta be. I was just about to say what like that. That you know, that kind of shocks me. He was like one of the first people that I started listening to, because of course he popped up on something. You know what I mean? When Trump started running for president,
I'm not trying to start any shit.
I don't know, neither am I, you know, but no, I believe that too. But no, like, yeah, that theory that he had, he had another funny theory about something about Hillary Clinton. Trump and Pence get impeached and removed, which is a pipe dream, obviously, and then Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi takes over as president.
Well, I mean, that could theoretically happen. That could theoretically happen, but it happens in the same... Right, that could theoretically happen, John, but that happens in the same universe where infinite monkeys with infinite typewriters, one of them, out of infinitude, writes Hamlet.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly a good way to put it. I'm going to use that a lot more, because there's a lot of things that can apply, just
to loop everything back, at that point in time, the probabilities exist that the infinite monkey who wrote Hamlet did so on a surfboard on the way from Africa to South America. Getting us all the way back to the beginning of the program. You may have missed that.
I was in and out, because sometimes, like, I listen to, well, TuneIn, I don't know if it needs an update on my phone, but if, like, I'm on Twitter and something that starts playing, it'll kick your whole thing off, and I just start, you know, like, it'll
the best way to listen to the horn on a mobile device is to just listen live directly from headon.live. It's just click, play, done.
Yeah, because you get a good, that's a reliable stream. Like, that is a reliable. I've never had it.
As Brother Deacon Steve from Georgia Stan points out, it is bulletproof.
Good.
The horn stream.
I don't like, though, having to listen to White Rose Society the next day podcast because, if I close out that browser, it'll start all over. You know, I accidentally close it out. And go back in again, it'll start it all over again. You know what I mean? To the beginning. Yeah. I don't know if it's something stupid, some weird setting on my phone. But
well, you can, so you can always, I don't know, are you Android or iPhone?
Android. Galaxy.
There's a podcast app that you can use, and if you just let it download, if you just grab the RSS feed, let it download, then you listen, you can start it and stop it at will, and it's not so... Podbean. You can use Podbean.
You can just use an independent
podcast app. And in fact, Brother Deacon Asa has tried to make it so you can listen on any podcasting platform that you like via the headon.live webpage.
Okay, I'll check that out. The Android, with my phone, I guess I have a weird setting on my phone. So, like, it crashes almost anything. You know what I mean? Like it'll crash your stream on headon.live, but I'm pretty damn sure it's my phone. There's something wrong with it.
Probably something wrong with all of the damn things.
Yeah. You're a tech guy, right? A computer dude?
Oh, fuck no.
You know, computer. Oh, you know, I thought you can, like, you don't know. All right, you don't know anything about graphics card, do you?
No. Okay. I mean, I built computers, but that just means I know what goes in which slots. That's when the trouble starts.
All right. So you don't know, because, like, I was wondering if anybody, maybe somebody in the Horn family could answer this. Like, does anybody know if 2 gigs of a graphics, two gig graphic card is sufficient for doing, like, just minor computer game, like just computer game, like first
low rent, yeah, like low rent gaming. Sure. I mean, I think I even know that, the stuff with the massive animation and everything. No, maybe I'm wrong.
So what, I need a 4 gig.
The good rule of thumb is get what you can afford, because the better you get, the longer you're going to have before you have to replace it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I just wanted, I know there's a lot of people that know a lot about it from the Horn community. And, there's something else I was going to talk about, mention to you while I have you, but I forget what it is. I'm trying to get everything out. Cause there's a bunch of stuff I wanted to talk to you about, because your expertise about with like law kind of stuff and, what can, you know, happen. Like, I guess the question right now would be, does this freaking objection that Josh Hawley wants to do have any weight behind it? As far as I know, this whole, like, the vice president or the president of the Senate, as the Constitution, says, that they're just supposed to unseal the votes in front of Congress, and that's pretty much it, or preside over the counting of them.
Yeah, they preside over the counting. That's all they do is count it. But now we're going to have some drama. More's a pity.
All right, so
I just realized something, John. Somebody was on the stress line too, and I completely spaced on that. This is why I need a producer. But they just hung up. Let's see.
I'll call back.
No worries. Listen. Jeremy in Vermont said, give John my email. So you send me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, BOBKINCAID. You know that already. You send me an email, and I'll put you in touch with Jeremy, and Jeremy can maybe help you walk through. Lee in New York says compatibility matters. It has to work with everything else, so you got to remember that. And Jeremy adds, as far as listen anywhere, I dropped a metal bowl this evening and it started playing Bob. Thanks, Asa. John, you have yourself a good evening. We'll be on the front porch tomorrow if you want to pop by, man. And if not, Happy New Year.
All right, yeah, you too. Happy New Year, Bob.
All right, take care,
and
John.
And everybody else.
All right, bye now.
You too.
Our buddy John in Central PA. Great conversation. Had a note from Darlene a little bit ago in Connecticut. Aside from the fact that Triple M, that would be Moscow Mitch McConnell, projects his avarice onto everything else, today it was the Democrats with his bullshit lies about the $2,000 stimulus. We must start calling him out loudly for who he is. He is a master redistributor of the vast wealth in common of the American people, our wealth, upwards into the hands of a few. That's what we must start saying every time his name's invoked. He's a political shyster. He's Robin Hood's alter ego. I guess that would make him Dunebor. Stealing from the hoi polloi to give to the rigged rich. I write rigged rich because this is how they continue to acquire wealth, by rigging the game. The system is rigged by wealthy enablers and facilitators in our political, i.e. the Triple M. Investigate ES&S. Investigate how Triple M, Lady G, and Susan Collins got reelected. Time to turn the tables on the GOP and beat them at their own damn game. And hear, hear. Hear, hear, Darlene. And so whoever it was that just hung up on the stress line, if you want to buzz back, there's a couple of minutes left in the program, not too many. Or, you know, maybe just jump in on the front porch come tomorrow evening. And again, I've got a dear friend who's going to join me in the first hour tomorrow. And after that, it'll be our New Year's Eve free-for-all. So thank you very kindly, everybody, for jumping in and making this a delightful program this evening. Thanks for putting up with my comedic stylings. Surfing monkeys. Oh, okay. Jude says it was me. Do know it was great listening, and I enjoyed every moment. Remember, I'm with you always, phone line or not. Thank you, Jude. Thank you so much, dear friend. And I'm sorry about that. I get wrapped up in the conversation, and I don't necessarily, and I can forget that there's somebody on another line, because it's not like the old phone system we used to have where I'd have six blinking lights, and I go, oh, yeah. It's a little bit more, what's the word, attenuated. Well, we've got somebody on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, it's me again.
Well, yay. I'm glad you decided to call back, Jude.
Well, yeah, I really enjoyed that. I haven't heard him before. Is he someone new calling in?
Oh, no. John's been a member of the community for quite a while. He just doesn't get a lot of opportunities to jingle in.
Oh, well, it was really good.
Wonderful.
But I wanted to, on Monday, when you were talking about Christmas, and when your daughter brought that salmon to the table.
Yes.
That triggered, that's how come I tried to call in, but I lost my phone in the house. I had one of the grandkids over. But the last week or so before the new year comes, it's kind of a reflective period. I mean, probably for a vast number of people, but with myself and the women, we take it very, very seriously. And what came to me last week were two different situations. One was with a young man who died on hospice, and the second is related to the salmon. And I wanted to, may I share that with you?
Absolutely.
Well, back in about 2001, I was invited to a long dance up in Canada, and I wasn't real familiar with that. The woman that had invited me was the hospice chaplain. So we went up, and it was really a very surreal, beautiful, picturesque setting. I mean, there was a long river that came, well, a long lake that came in alongside the lodge. And then just across from there was this enormous mountain with just these majestic evergreen trees. And as you would look down the narrow lake, there were two pieces of land that came together, and you could almost envision a Native American man coming through there with a canoe. So it was that kind of just that kind of space to be in. Well, in the afternoon they separated. Oh, very much so, very, very much. In the afternoon, they separated the men from the women, and we went into this huge lodge, thick with, you know, wood on the walls and windows that went from the floor to the ceiling. So you had this, huge convergence of so much energy. And the drumming started, and before I knew it, I found myself in the back of an eagle, and I was nestled in the neck of it. And so, I mean, really secure, and the eagle flew and then made this landing and came down on this barren plain. And I got off. I mean, it was like literally sliding off feathers onto this plain. And he takes off, and I'm standing there. And off in the distance, I see this kind of clouds of something like dust, and it comes closer and closer. And it's about 20 feet from me, and it stops. And as as it all dispersed, it's this huge herd of buffalo. And the buffalo are kind of moving and such. And all of a sudden they part, and out walks a Native American woman in a white buckskin. And she walks towards me, and she's probably like about 5 feet. And she has something in her hands. And before I know it, the drumming stops, and then we kind of come back. I never had, you know, I was with hospice for a long time, and there were a lot of different experiences, but I didn't have those kinds of things that went on. So later that night, I sat with Pat and shared with her. We were down by the lake, and they were drumming, and we were getting ready to. They were going to do long dance to bring the salmon back to Washington State. So I told her, I said, "Gosh, I had this." You know, I reiterated the story, and Pat started laughing, and she told me the story of white buffalo calf women. You know, and she was the one that brought the ceremonial peace pipe to the Lakota, which was a very honorable thing. Well, I just kept that and, you know, went back to hospice and work, and it just kind of sat there for a long time. Well, I went down to spend a weekend in Lake Quinault. The Quinault Forest is one of the last rainforests, you know, on the planet. It breathes, you know, constantly breathes. And we went over to see a friend who happened to be a Lakota woman, my dear friend Kirsten, and we were having coffee together and talking, and she says, "Why don't you tell Marla the story?" So I tell her the story, and when I get to the end of it, she said, "Just a second," and she gets up and she walks out of the room and comes back, and she's got this red bundle, and she kneels in front of me, and she said, "According to our culture, if you are to receive the gift after the third offering, then take it." Well, I didn't have to take it, but I was supposed to come for some reason. And I opened it up, and it was a ceremonial pipe. So I kept that.
Oh,
with
wow.
Me for quite a, yes, yes. And I knew it wasn't mine. You know, I didn't have a right to that. You know, that culture is sacred, you know, the ritual, all of that kind. But I kept it, and I smoked it once with tobacco because I was instructed to do that. And then occasionally I would go in and just put grounds of tobacco in there, you know, for the Great Spirit, which was part of the ritual. Well, about 4 years after that, I'm living on the beach on Burley Lagoon. And the same woman, Pat, who brought me to Long Dance, brought her sister, who happened to work on a Native American reservation. And I hadn't thought about Mary for a long, long time. And they were going to spend the night in Beachcomb and all of that. And all of a sudden, I thought the ceremonial pipe. And I went in, and we sat out on the deck. And I told her the whole story of that and ended up gifting it to her. And she works on the reservation teaching high school students. So when you mention the salmon and your daughter and the table, you know, it's just such a, and how I had been thinking about Long Dance, that was when actually the peace essence was given at that Long Dance back in 2001, and it was only manifested with the flowers and boots, you know, through Mike's program in 2006. So I view it as a closure for the year. It's, you know, a circle has come together, and I can share that with you. And it makes, you know, to me, it makes the world a little bit stronger and a little bit braver.
And a little bit nearer.
Yeah.
And a little bit better.
Yeah,
you remind me of something that happened many years ago now, probably 11 or more. But we were rallying for a new school down at Marsh Fork Elementary, and I know you know where that is.
Mm-hmm.
It's the elementary school that sat at the base of the massive toxic waste enclosure. And you had
Bob, I called that nurse at that school.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah, and I got a hold of that whole community. I even got a hold of that funeral home. And I said, Are you aware of that? And he wasn't. And I said, well, I'm a retired hospice nurse. I think you best be prepared. So I didn't mean to interject.
No. Quite all right. I was merely going to point out we had the rally, and that was the year that the mountaintop remover's wife with the fistfuls of gaggedy Walmart jewelry and rings sucker punched Agnes in the kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
And of course she's had kidney problems ever since. I mean, is there a connection? I don't know. That was also the year that the state police had snipers on the roof of the school. And we had a prayer circle on the football field. And my dear friend Matt, he would deny the term if I used the word shaman to describe him, but I think he is. He's indigenous. And we all gathered in a circle, and we all offered tobacco. Didn't smoke, not a flame, not on fire, but offered it to the four winds.
Mm-hmm.
And he called upon the ancestors to witness our cries for justice. And at that moment, that very moment, and somewhere it's still on video, but at that moment, from back behind one of the hills that they were blowing up, a hawk flew, calling, and it circled three times over us and then flew away west. And and there was more than 100 of us, I think, and not a single person there, native, white, African-American, Latino, Asian, not a person there did not have chills from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my buddy Bo walking up to him, and looking at him and saying, how do you do that? And Matt looked at him and said, anybody can do it. You just have to have your mind in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen him do other things, too. It defies science. It defies rational explanation. But you know what your eyes see and your ears hear. And your self beholds.
You know, and it takes strength. I think it takes strength to be able to be present to the unknown and to be there in the stillness of, you know, when you and John were talking about, you know, these 80 million insane people, you know, I went back to that. It reminded me of when I sent you that Scott Peck's book, People That Lie. And he talks about the evolutionary process. And how they were never, and I don't mean to say they, but that group.
Yeah, I understand. No apologies.
Never able to cultivate the ability to think and process, you know, to question. And that they choose or are forced to because of brokenness, whatever it is, just have to be so protective and irrational. I mean, it must be just a... You know, when I was down in Portland, you know, just watch those Proud Boys. None of them can stand still. There's all this surging, and you can just envision.
Well, not to take away from the argument that you're making, Jude, or the suggestion that I sense you're making, but Well, most of them probably can't stand still because they're half out of their minds on meth or crack or coke or even just
for whatever reason.
But yeah, but they are. Yeah, but you see, stillness and contemplation are their enemy.
Well, they wouldn't be able to tolerate. It's like Todd when he went into the limbic system. I mean, it's just flooded. And it's not flooded with, oh, gosh, I'm kind of nervous. It's like, I'm so fucked up. And, you know, all those real powerful.
Dude, let's hit somebody.
Powerful. Yeah, I mean, that kind of. But I don't want to get it so much into. I'd like to share the last one with you.
Sure.
About the hospice. And this is kind of symbolic, and I'm not a woman of any kind of religion, or you know, I have my own thing that
you have a legitimate personal spirituality.
Yeah, that's. But I was called in. When I was working, I started at 5 p.m. and went off at 8 a.m. So I had a lot of the, you know, the death and crisis things. And I came into a freestanding AIDS home, beautiful home in the North End. And I had never met the young man before, but he was actively dying and was having difficulty. So it took about an hour, you know, with morphine and just sitting and being present. We changed him and got him all comfortable. And I went back. She invited me to have a cup of tea. And I'm sitting, and we just sat down, and she poured a cup of it. And we heard this huge sound of him collapsing, you know, table going over. And I thought, oh, my God. So I go in, and he had gotten out of bed, gone around the foot of the bed, over towards the window and had collapsed sitting on his left hip, you know, with his legs out. And I came real quickly and I kind of slid in. And so I put my arms, my chest went to his back and pulled him, you know, to myself. And within, I bet you it was a millimeter of a second, I found myself standing on a vast precipice with whiteness. And it was so quick. And then I was back. And when I left and got home after he had finally comfortably, you know, died back in bed, I called everyone on the hospice team because it was so important that we share, you know, what it is that we see. And I even woke Stu Farber, our medical director, and he goes, well, yeah, he says, of course that would happen, you know, to you. He says, but it's good that you share that. And he says, it's important that we just don't know. Now, whatever that was, and whatever happened, you know, with the eagle and all of that. So I kind of close that circle, you know, with you and take all that goodness and put that into midnight tomorrow night for a better and a healthier year for all of us.
Hear, hear. May it so be.
Okay. So you take good care of you and love to everyone. And thanks, Bob.
Oh, thank you, Jude. And we're doing our best, and you do the same. Thank you, dear.
Okay, honey. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye.
Jude is truly sui generis. She is an individual unto herself. And it's always a delight to be within the realm of her spirituality. Because, you know, there's a big difference, this being prayer meeting Wednesday and all, there's a big difference between religion and spirituality. That little goober with the surfing monkeys at the beginning of the program, that little dude is not spiritual in any sense of the word. And probably never will be. But I know people who are vowed atheists who yet acknowledge, if nothing else, mystery in the universe. And I'm kind of one of those people. I know what I don't believe. But I do know, for instance, that the one rare time ever so short that I was able to stand among redwoods, I knew that I was in a more sacred space than any cathedral I'd ever walked in, any church. And those little sacred moments are there for the taking. I posted those pictures from Christmas Day. It was all of, 10, 15 degrees, and the roads were bearable enough and passable enough that I could get down to Hawk's Nest because I felt like I just had to be there just to take a picture of that beautiful, from that beautiful overlook of the gorge and that view of hundreds of millions of years. And I got those pictures and I posted them on my Facebook and I think posted on Instagram, Twitter. And again, I felt like I was in a sacred space. No magic. No ritual. Just breathing in the peace and quiet of it all. I don't know what that is. But I know it's nice when it happens. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to each and every one of you who keep this program on the air. Thank you so much for your subscriptions via PayPal and Patreon. Thank you for your a la carte contributions, your challenges, your responses to the challenges. Thank you all so very much, because that's how this program continues to exist. And I can never adequately express our gratitude. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time on this planet, engaging in this long-running conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Deacon Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Fresh Malloy on the way. It should be there about 9 o'clock, I do believe. Best place to listen to the brand new Malloy is at headon.live in the first run. Thank you, John Fox in Australia, and Happy New Year to you, because it'll get to you before it gets to me and to all of our friends in various locales in the Southern Hemisphere. And in, well, not the, yeah, that too, but particularly in the Trans-Pacific. Thank you. And Happy New Year. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Please get well, Ben. Ben's been in a hell of a lot of pain. He had surgery and was absolutely beside himself in agony earlier today. I hope he has gotten some relief. We're thinking of you, Ben. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. The best way to stay safe is to stay home, and I wish I could do more of it. If you have to be out, take every precaution you possibly can. Wear your mask. Make sure your masks are clean. Wash your hands. Wear your gloves. Use your hand sanitizer liberally. Maintain your social distance 10 feet or more between people who are wearing masks. And if somebody's not wearing a mask, you can't get far enough away from them. And for heaven's sakes, if somebody comes towards you prattling about monkeys on surfboards, surf rafts, avoid those people like the plague, because they are. Later, y'all. Thursday on the front porch for New Year's Eve tomorrow. I hope you'll join us. And Dr. Bill, in an unusual Thursday, thank you, dear, in an unusual Thursday broadcast for New Year's Eve, Dr. Bill will be live tomorrow from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and, of course, always available on podcast. Okay? Later, y'all.